are you? Hope you're doing fabulous on this Thursday morning. Hey, Dave, how are you?
I'm good, G. Happy Thursday.
Yeah, we've got the whole crew with us. We've got Super Joe and Vivian behind the glass. We've also got Mary Vandeveld.
Good morning. I thought it was Friday.
I know. It felt like it was going to be
Didn't
Friday.
Didn't it feel like a Friday? I don't know why.
Of course, a lot of kids not going to be going to school today. A lot of parents had to find alternative means and figure out where kids were going to go today. So with the teacher strike happening.
Luckily, they had enough time to do that, hopefully.
Has that affected the roads at all this morning? Or
Not yet. I'll know in about within an hour.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It is early, right?
Yeah.
I forget how early that we come to work.
Not even some teachers go this early.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It will affect it, though, I'm sure.
And Dave, you're going to be heading out today, right? Or tomorrow?
Well, I won't. Yes, we have a game tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So.
A big one.
Big one.
He's heading out to home. The game's tomorrow night.
Aha.
By the way, I had a technical problem downstairs.
Oh, you did?
Elevator?
Oh,
the gate? The turnstile?
Oh. No, the escalators aren't working.
We
and it turns out you can't wait at the bottom of them.
There are stairs, Steve.
What?
Right in the middle, right between the two escalators, Steve.
Going up. So did you do the thing? Well, you just had to walk up the escalator, right?
Oh, no, that's far too dangerous.
No, it's not.
Well, I mean, I didn't know, especially with all the escalator talk yesterday. Was it yesterday that you were talking about how to properly
safely be on an escalator?
Because death
and can
escalators.
You not learn from this show or what? What?
That is very strange.
So I stood there for about 30 minutes waiting for the escalator to start, and I said, well, I got to figure out another option. So then I did climb the stairs.
You do understand they don't turn the escalator on till it's convenient.
What do you mean? Only when there's people?
I mean, sometimes it's on, sometimes it's on, sometimes it's...
Do you have to have a ticket for that ride?
When Dave and I come in, it's in the process, or it's not at all.
Some mornings they have it running, some mornings they... But a lot of times I take the outside route anyway.
Maybe that's it's like your DVR, you know, it says that it saves an entire day's worth of energy if they don't, you know, have it on overnight.
They've done it a few times where they think it's funny, where I'm on it and they shut it down halfway up.
But you're okay because you're holding on to both sides.
Then they reverse it.
I took that escalator yesterday after we had that conversation on the air. I'm saying this isn't going to work. I'm standing on the right where I always do.
Big show today. Chuck Todd, of course, on Thursdays always joins us to talk about the world. And oh, what a world it is. You just mentioned Northwestern football. Fitz, Coach Fitz, will be on.
See, it's Thursday for him, too.
What kind of mood is he in?
He's been in a good mood this week. So.
I like how it wasn't convincing the way he said that.
No, I mean, I haven't been hanging out with him that much.
The team's having a rough year. He's got a right to be in a not so good mood.
You know what? I saw him on doing an interview on WTTW on Chicago Tonight. Also did a very, very engaging personality.
Why was he on WTTW?
Chicago Tonight about a week or so ago.
It was great.
Talking about leadership and the value of his education and football.
Right.
I don't watch Chicago Tonight. My mother watches it religiously, and I've only been on the show a couple times as a guest. And they haven't invited me in years. So I don't know what I did the last time I was on.
You did something.
The topic was escalators and what you do when they don't work.
Yeah. Well, I think you're an expert. I can't imagine.
Dean Richards later, of course, more on entertainment. And if you are caught as a woman in particular in an awkward hug where you don't know if you do what. I don't know how to describe these. The sideways hug, the full-on front hug, or the... is there another?
There's dozens in this book. It sounds pretty interesting, but I think there are plenty of people that engage in awkward hugs because they're a little bit, they're either a little bit socially awkward or they find themselves in situations where...
When do you get to the point where you're comfortable with the full-on, man, am I glad to see a, you know, bear hug?
Well, it depends on whether you're a hugger or not. There's some people that
know the person.
Some people just love hugging and that's how they greet even strangers. And some people don't. Some people don't like to be touched. They like a perimeter of personal space that's, expansive.
Mary Vandeveld, who do you hug that way? Family only?
No. I hug people I haven't seen in a while. Mm-hmm. I hug coworkers, I think.
Sometimes I hug complete strangers.
Yeah, it's the too long hug that you got to watch.
Ah,
yes.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. Or too close.
Yeah. Pressy hugs.
Yeah. You don't want a full frontal hug. You want, like, you know, that's a little too, you don't want a super glue hug.
Yeah, you got to lean to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Why the left?
I don't know, because when I hug, I
Because that's your escape route?
I don't know. To the right is awkward.
You don't want your faces too close together either, because then it looks like you're going in for like a kiss.
Yeah. There's a lot of situations.
Yeah.
How much thought goes into it when you hug?
Well, sometimes it happens where you're both kind of approaching each other and you look like birds doing an awkward dance because you don't know whether you're going in for a hug and they don't know if you're going in for a hug, and then they start going in, so then you start going in, but you're not timed properly.
I usually take the pressure off. I just announce it. I go, get over here. Come on.
I have seen you do that.
Yeah.
That makes it less awkward.
Yeah.
Because then you know what's happening. Sometimes you just don't know. Is it a handshake? Is it a hug? What's
some people,
incoming?
You look at them and you go, you're not hug worthy.
Oh,
you kind of.
So there's an instantaneous judgment.
Well, if you don't, if you know something about the person that you don't want, you know, you don't want to hug them, and you're like, ooh, I don't believe in something this person believes in, or I don't know. It's a lot of weird things.
Well, that's deep.
It's all part of this book, which is called "That Was Awkward." Coming up after.
I'm so excited
8 o'clock.
About that.
Troy Murray at 9:10, and we have Troy Murray bobbleheads in here, don't we?
John and Troy bobblehead. How about that?
Yeah. And we also have our friends coming in from the Tivoli, where we'll do the New Year's Eve show. All that on this show.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the Top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
And we'll keep you up to date with the breaking news on whether or not the escalator's fixed. Mr. Grzanich is back under the weather. We're monitoring that situation.
Apparently.
Okay. Yeah. Let's get to the top six at six, as mentioned. Elijah Cummings has died, the 68-year-old congressman from Maryland, whose parents were sharecroppers, who was told as a child he didn't have the educational stamina or abilities to become the lawyer that he dreamed to be. Well, he beat the odds all the way across the board. Been in the House of Representatives for, I believe, 22 years. And most recently on the House committee overseeing the end, if you will, of the Mueller probe. But a very important and influential congressman for a long time. Unfortunately, part of his obituary will be the back and forth with Trump over whether or not Baltimore is dirty and rat infested. He had half the city as his district, and he will be missed. An extremely popular congressman, really on both sides. And somebody as far right as Congressman Morgan was a friend, even though he didn't stick up for Cummings, the way Cummings stuck up for him. You'll read a lot about him. You'll hear a lot about it today. He was only 68, and he had a heart problem last year that he never really fully recovered from. And it seems this was complications from that. All right, next. Joe Maddon's got a job. The former Cubs manager, former as in 3 weeks ago, has agreed to a three-year, $12 million deal. That's not bad.
Nope.
Mann discussed his comfort with Angels owner Artie Moreno. He struck a deal which includes parking for his VW van, I'm sure, right?
Well, that's, I think it was Mark Gonzalez in the Tribune suggested one of the things that he needs to do is hire a driver to get, because I guess he's got a place in, I want to say in Long Beach, somewhere on the coast.
Okay.
And to, and you know what the traffic's like.
Absolutely.
In Orange County. I
sure.
mean, it could take him 3 days to get to Angel Stadium.
I did not know this, but Maddon won his first World Series ring coaching under Mike Socha in the 2002 Angels champions.
Yeah. He was a minor league catcher with the Angels. He was a minor league manager, coach, a major league coach there. So he's got a long history. So that was the one that I think when he left the Cubs, it was only a matter of time before he ended up there.
Next, developers plan to break ground next week on a delayed Helmut Jahn-designed condominium tower that would be the tallest building in the iconic row of skyscrapers on Michigan Avenue across from Grant Park, called 1000M, a reference to the address in the 1000 block of South Michigan. The 832-foot, 74-story tower would have the largest number of units in any condo building launched in Chicago since the recession. The building continues. Where are all these people coming from?
I wonder that, too. And these are expensive, I mean, very expensive units.
So you got the Tribune Tower, which is going to be at least partly residential. I think actually majority. I think some of it's office, some of it's hotel. And now this.
There's a lot of lake people.
The lake people.
They live in the lake. They're moving to land.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They're evolving.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you know, at least you're bringing up the sensible side of this. Next. It turns out that Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi don't like each other so much. Yesterday, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer showed up for a meeting at the White House along with other congressional leaders. And Trump called Pelosi a third grade, was reported initially as third rate. I think it's probably the same. But a third grade congresswoman. She got up and left. And she was followed by several other high-ranking members as well. And they described Trump as having a meltdown, as would be expected. Moments later, Trump said, "Nuh-uh, you had a meltdown. It wasn't me, it was you." And to continue the immaturity, Pelosi then posted the picture of her standing up to leave, which Trump had used as evidence on his own Twitter feed that she actually had the meltdown instead of him. These are the people leading America. Who's confident? Raise your hand now. And finally this. Volunteers can help sort through the Field Museum's enormous collection of fossils, insects, and more during an event starting today. The event's called We Dig Bio. And it brings volunteers to the museum to help go through the field specimens and record information about them online. Participants will get free admission to the museum and a behind-the-scenes tour of its collections. Personally, I think this is brilliant because it forces participants to do the work of the Field Museum to clean up their crap. You know, all the stuff they need to have cleaned up and cataloged. Let's make the public do it.
I do a lot of volunteer when I go to Jewel. I check out myself. I did not realize I was an employee until just recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
I bag it. I do everything.
Yeah, congratulations. was that six or five? I think that was only five. One more. Chicago Food Bank is planning to help provide nutritious food to Chicago children and teens who will be impacted if the teacher's strike goes on for a very long time. Obviously, it starts today. The Greater Chicago Food Depository will partner with libraries and parks and the YMCA to provide light snacks, fruit, and in some cases, cold meals starting today as the strike gets underway. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot announced that Chicago Public Schools will be open, saying the city and the Chicago Teachers Union have not been able to come to a deal, and obviously they couldn't come to a deal yesterday as well. So there you go. That is, once and for all, your Top 6 at 6.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Now, we got a couple of bonus minutes here before we get to the bottom of the hour and headlines. And do we know if Grzanich is okay, or did he have to be rushed in for medical care?
I didn't hear anything. I thought because he came back yesterday.
No.
And by the way, I got an entire huge container of half and half for him.
Yes, you did.
Wow.
This is after you stole it when I was out of town.
Yes. And he you know, was excited about that. So I thought he was on the mend.
Did you ever get the full Grzanich anger?
Oh, no. So that's why I just admitted what I did and to preempt that because...
Mary, yeah. Dave, you've both... Joe, I think you have as well. You've all witnessed the Grzanich tornado when he's upset, right?
Yes. And
really...
I threw away his fruit, I told you. That was... Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was not good.
No. But his dog has been ill as well, so...
Oh, is that why he's up?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. He was sick. His dog was sick. They both ate carrots.
And sadly, John, I know you don't want to go into this, but we note with sadness your family loss.
Oh, little Chelsea, yeah. So that was
so sorry for your loss.
You're
sorry.
No,
sorry to have brought that up.
Chelsea is a dog, by the way.
Yes. Sorry.
Chelsea was how old?
She was 14, so she lived a long life.
That's a good life.
But that's the first time we had that done at home, which...
I didn't even know vets did that. Vets would come to your house and...
Well, it's a special service, but they do come to the house, and it was much better for her because we got to lay her on our master bed, and she just, you know... It was... Yeah, but it's still...
She went to sleep.
Worst. Yeah, it's just horrible.
It's very sad.
So,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right, at 6:29, the show lays out this way. Yes, Chuck Todd will be on here in just a few minutes, and at one point, I expect Chuck Todd to actually come on and say the world will end today at noon until we get our rants wrapped around all of this. One last note before we get to those headlines. I was at Patty Vasquez's campaign kickoff last night. Former late-night WGN radio personality.
You actually attended an event?
Yeah.
Whoa, you usually like to be invited and you don't go.
Well, she's been a friend for a long time.
Oh, wow.
Plus, I think she'll be a good state rep.
She has blackmail on you, doesn't she?
Not as far as you know. But a nice, nice little party at the Gale Street Inn, and she, you know, she had a nice kickoff to a campaign. The primary is not till the spring. But how about this for good luck? It's Patty, and the primary is on St. Patrick's Day.
I like how you connected that. Yeah,
cool. I didn't. They did. They explained it to me. So I saw a bunch of people there, including a young man who said, you know, my mom's a big fan. So let me just say, Gene Simon, good morning to you. I met your son last night, your favorite son. And thank you for listening. Appreciate that very much. What's that now?
How do you know he's her favorite son?
He said he's the only son.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think he's got a good chance. Yeah. Time now for the headlines as we continue.
Welcome to Sunday.
Wait a second.
What day is it? The date's
wrong. May. Thursday.
What year?
Wait, what?
Hello, you there, boy.
Me, sir?
Yes, you, my good fella. What day is today?
Today?
From NBC News in Washington, the longest running show in television history. This is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
Here's the weird thing. When Chuck comes in the house after work, he has that played. That's how the family greets him. Chuck Todd joins us now. And let me just start, Mr. Todd, by congratulating you on the incredible success of your Washington Nationals, who now got a week off before the World Series.
I appreciate how much credit you give to me for this, because, you know, as you know, being, you know, sitting on the sidelines, throwing spitballs from the peanut gallery at Davey Martinez and all of that, that is what inspired these guys to win. So I appreciate the fact that you are aware of this, that
no
it is
question.
The fans that make this happen, not the players in the field or any of that other stuff.
And while Chuck's trying to get his multiple jobs done, Martinez is calling him about pitching changes even when he's not at the park. So yeah, it's not easy being you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be fun. I have to say, here's the fun thing about being in a town with a World Series. First time I've ever lived in a town with a World Series.
It's fun.
Is the amount of friends and family I've already had contacting me. So I was thinking about visiting. I was thinking about this. How many extra tickets do you have? I'm like, how many? I'm just trying to get some.
Yeah, because what happens, kids, whenever there's a Stanley Cup or a World Series, generally everybody's got extra tickets that lives in town, so feel free to ask. Nobody has extra tickets.
That's great.
Come on.
Jesus.
All right, so the end of the world as we know it, it's not so visible yet, but we can see it on GPS if we Google it. So it's uglier than ever. Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump are fighting. None of this is a huge surprise, I suppose, but what state is your Washington in this morning?
Well, I mean, thank God for the Nationals. I think it's keeping the town from completely collapsing upon itself on that front. Look, you know, one of the things I remember discussing with my own staff, we talked about this, about impeachment, and that there was potentially a both strategic benefit to it for Democrats politically, but also it didn't mean that it wasn't going to be painful. And I think impeachment was going to surface the worst version of Trump. And I think, meaning, you know, the part of Trump that even those supporters say they don't like, you know, the Twitter, the bullier, all that thing, he is in a sustained period of this version of himself, right? The angry version of himself, the spun up version of himself. And it is leading him to make all sorts of haste. I mean, I think that his current state of mind and state of play may have what got us into this serious situation. Like, you can't help but ask that. But I don't understand why we're not dealing with the elephant in the room here, which is his temperament, because the temperament problem was something that plenty of folks identified. And it's in a moment like this that you find out when that temperament problem rears its head. And here he is. He's under pressure on impeachment and pressure on the other front, and he can't handle it. And he's making bad decisions, right? It's the elephant in the room, and I'm surprised. Well, I'm not surprised, but it should be something that should be of more public concern.
Yeah, you can't have the president acting like a child having a tantrum. And this is what this appears to be. Now, do you think on any level he's aware that using the power of commander-in-chief and doing the pullout of the troops in Syria as fast as he did, along with green-lighting Turkey, go have at it, it's not our problem. Is he aware that was a mistake now?
Not only does he not, he will never admit that it's a mistake. He has made himself feel better because, you know, he's got his own political people claiming to him that the base loves it. The base wants him to get these troops out. The base wants out of these endless wars. The base is with him, not with the, you know, the neocons of the Republican Party. So he is emboldened. He judges everything now through whether his base is stuck. If his base sticks with him, he's like, oh, it's popular. No, it just means your base likes it. Doesn't mean anybody else likes it. But he is in that level of sort of, I don't know what to call it, but if his base approves, then he decides it's a good political idea. So no, he does not view it any way the way you just described it. Just the opposite. He thinks he's a genius.
I've been out of town the past couple of weekends, and I get an opportunity, as you do, to talk to people who don't swim in this pool and follow this stuff every single day. And there's confusion about it, because I think a lot of people listening would agree and watch you and say, well, yeah, we ought to be out of these endless wars. But there are things that have to be untied in a timely manner, or we get to right back to where we were before, where ISIS gets to rebuild.
Steve, we bombed our own base.
That's what I'm talking about. That's a tad hasty.
We are in such a, you know, it was such a hasty decision. This is such a hasty decision that it makes the helicopters, you know, leaving Saigon, you know, seem like a plan, a 10-year plan, you know, the ending of a 10-year plan. I mean, it was so hasty. It was done with such disregard for the safety of our troops and the safety of folks we've been fighting with and the safety of folks we've been trying to protect there and trying to, you know keep from totally imploding on itself. And we had to bomb our own base. I mean, because a supposed NATO ally was about to take over the base. That's how much we trust the Turks on the military front, but this president seems to trust them just fine. The power Erdogan has over Trump is something else.
And this, of course, opens the door for all sorts of good times for Putin and inability to prop up Assad. And it's all one big hot mess. I salute Congressman Adam Kinzinger standing up this morning to say the president's made a huge mistake. There's not exactly a big line of Republicans here, but it's louder than it used to be.
You know, every time I tell people this, you know, I'll hear from folks who say, I can't believe, you know, most of the Republicans are sticking with him. I said, you know what, though? It's like watching the tide eat away at a beach. Yes, you know, the tide comes out. You know, it's like just a few Republicans don't go back every time, right? A few every time when he does one of these things. He loses a couple here or there. You know what? A couple here or there, and suddenly there's a pretty, you know, there's a pretty large chunk of folks. So, you know, yes, it's Adam Kinzinger, you're right, is one of a few, but he wasn't somebody speaking out against him a month ago.
No, that's actually true, but I'll take later than never. Now, before I ask you your prediction for the World Series, the overnight hours, we found out that Elijah Cummings passed at the far too young age of 68. Yeah. Any personal thoughts on him?
Well, he was somebody that I think, you know, sometimes there was a time that John Lewis is certainly a nationally known civil rights figure in the civil rights movement and certainly in Baltimore civil rights activism. Elijah Cummings is sort of a key player, major player. And just somebody, look, I thought he was on his way to being the first African-American Speaker of the House. I think that was, frankly, had he not run into his health complications, he would have been. He had an ability to... he had real respect on the other side of the aisle. I mean, real respect. But guys like Jason Chaffetz, if you remember him, the Utah conservative, they had built a decent bond and got that committee working a little bit better again. And he, you know, the guy was sort of, you know, he had that ability to always be optimistic, always try to find something good in somebody. And smart politicians figured that out about him, and he was usually a player to make things work. Look, I think if he was healthier, he'd be running this impeachment proceeding. That's what kind of trust and authority he would have had that you wouldn't have the amount of people criticizing him. I mean, Donald Trump went after this guy, and if you recall, like that was one of the few times Republicans stuck up for a Democrat getting attacked.
Right,
and it says a lot more about Elijah Cummings.
Yeah, I didn't know him. Maybe interviewed him twice. Just seemed like a very decent man.
He assumed the best of people. I wish I could do the same. I don't know what other nicer thing to say about the guy. He assumed the best in most people. And you're like, God love you, man.
Yeah, what an unusual trait today. All right, I got your Nats against the Yankees or the Astros. That's right. Or I got your Nats winning in six.
You know, it's interesting. How cool for the Nats if they have to go through the Dodgers, Cardinals, and Yankees to win a World Series, mm-hmm. right? It's not like you're going through a bunch of expansion teams, right? You're going through the blue bloods of baseball. I'm sure my friends at Fox don't want to see a Houston Nationals World Series.
Not great for the numbers.
Like to see the Yankees in there. Look, I think we match up better against the Yankees than we do against the Astros. The Astros will be probably the greatest combination of pitching since like the 68 World Series, right? Denny McClain and Bob Gibson. Maybe two runs will be scored that entire seven-game series. The Yankee series was great because it would basically be great, you know, great hitting versus great pitching.
Yep.
Right, which we're about to see. You know, you tell me if the Yankees can beat Houston, then the Yankees can beat the Nationals. But if they can't beat Houston, I don't think they can beat the Nationals.
So you got your boys in seven then? It sounds like a seven-gamer for you.
I don't know, man. Seven means having to win one in Houston. I just don't think they can win in seven.
Okay.
Right?
All right, so it's got to be early.
I think they've got to win it. I think it's got to be five, I'll just be honest.
All right, and Dave Ennett.
Got to get it done in Nationals ballpark.
Dave Ennett, we're out of time here, but you and I were talking, and I said to you, this feels like the 2005 White Sox, who absolutely rolled through the postseason
at the right time.
Yep. Total pixie dust. I completely agree. Everything is going right. I mean, everybody, every night it's a new guy getting the key hit. No, it's all happening. It's like the dust was sprinkled on them. And, you know, good luck stopping it.
Especially when you see the Cardinals kick the ball around the way they did the other night.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's...
By the way, isn't this usually the Cardinals? I mean, that was the other thing. I kept waiting for the shoe to drop. You know, in the eighth inning, when Carpenter was up there as the go-ahead run with the bases loaded, I'm like, this is how they do it. You know, it's like, this is how the Cardinals do this thing sometimes, right? You're just like, oh, if this ends this way, I'm going to... But no, whatever the pixie dust looked like this year, it fell on the Nationals' head.
Well, Dave is a D.C. Native, grew up in D.C., and he was wondering if you could get him, say, six,
yes.
maybe eight tickets.
Six.
My old high school friends were there the other night.
Yeah. Is third baseline okay?
You know, yeah, if you could, Chuck, I'd appreciate that.
Chuck Dodd.
Maybe I won't be able to get you concierge service. I know you're used to that.
That is an outrage.
I don't go.
The Chuck Toddcast, Meet the Press at MTP Daily. Thank you, my friend.
See you, brother.
There you go. All right, 6:53, Steve Cochran Show, and that's Dave, that's G. Pat Brady is here, John DeCoss is here, and John, we'll talk more about our New Year's Eve show later, but it's going to be one of two. We'll be at the Rouse Center on New Year's Eve for what amounts to a midday luncheon show.
Yeah, pretty much.
Was it 1 o'clock?
It's 1 o'clock, which we did like 3 years ago,
right.
And that we did really well.
And we'll be at the Tivoli, and some folks in the Tivoli will be in later New Year's Eve. What time's that show?
7 o'clock, that starts.
All right, where do we get tickets?
For the Rouse, you can go to rouse.org. And then for rouse.org, excuse me. And then for the Tivoli, go to Classic Cinemas. .com, and then I think all they have to do is it's Classic Cinemas Steve, and it clicks right on, and we get the more important thing is we're not doing Eventbrite this year. That's the big announcement.
You can take a try from the Tivoli.
You can talk to the Tivoli or go online and
make your life easier.
Record. Yes.
And all this, of course, is an Iceman production, and there's a charitable component to it for you guys showing up at the show and all that. The CPS school strike starts, and pickets are out this morning. Jesse Sharkey is all over the TV news this morning with your pickets in the background. So kids are going to miss school for the first time, and they're missing stuff that you know, we didn't know, Dave, Pat, John, Mary, when we were growing up, because now they just go to school, and they fly in on their Jetsons little flying machine. And then they land, and then they go in, and they have a chip in their heads, and all the work is done by blinking their eyes. Isn't that the way school works now?
Pretty much.
There's no card catalogs, right?
No.
That was psychedelic.
I showed them a pencil, and everybody got scared.
How about rope climbs? Do kids climb ropes anymore?
What? What are you talking
about? Do you know about this?
What's a rope climb?
What's a rope climb?
Come on.
That was my biggest, biggest nightmare.
I know.
There was a fitness test that you had to climb. Imagine this now with the lawyers involved. Kids had to climb the rope, touch the ceiling, and come back down.
There's no way I would have been able to do that.
Well, I didn't.
Hardly any of the girls could do it.
And very few boys. There were a few little boys who would grow up and be criminals.
Humiliation.
Who would be able to climb super fast, touch, and come down. I'm guessing, Pat Brady, you were one of them.
Oh, of course. But, you know, it might...
Wow! No hesitation.
I was probably the best grade school athlete ever to come out of Trinity in Bloomington.
Oh my goodness!
That is quite an honor.
I peaked in third grade.
Yeah.
I'm not bitter about it though.
Does school still have chalkboards?
Or dry erase boards?
Oh wow!
Yeah, I think it's always dry erase boards. Or now they do a lot.
Nobody claps the erasers.
Oh no!
I was in a band called the Eraser Clappers. I know.
But it might even be more electronic.
Yes. I think, even now they do the thing where they write on something and then it just is on a screen.
Like the overhead projector?
Right.
But better than
with
that.
With that marking pen. Yes.
How about film strips with a beep?
Oh, man.
That's Johnny should have paid more attention in driver's ed. Beep. Johnny wrapped his car around a tree. Beep. And, they kept changing the slides. And, of course, dodgeball.
Oh, I know dodgeball for sure. That's painful.
But nobody has it anymore.
Can't play it.
That was my second nightmare.
All right, so we'll examine Mary's nightmares and other things coming up next hour on 720 WGN. One of the biggest college football games in a very long time, maybe since the last time Northwestern played Notre Dame a season or two ago.
I don't know. They played Ohio State for the Big Ten championship last year.
But I mean, it's here.
Oh, you mean here?
Here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd go along with that. Yeah.
And it's tomorrow night. We'll preview it with Coach Fitz coming up here in just a few minutes. The Steve Cochran Show, and as always, and I mean this, thank you for listening. Why wouldn't I mean that? Not news.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Thanks. Have a great rest of the day. Go Cats.
Well, time to get this train back on the tracks, Dave.
Yes, it is.
Get this truck back on the road.
Yep.
Get Grandma back in the...
What?
I don't know. I ran out of stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, live, it's Coach Fitz and a preview of Northwestern Ohio State. Going to be a nut house tomorrow night as fourth-ranked, Dave? Fourth-ranked Buckeyes?
They were third last week. Now they're fourth.
Fourth-ranked Buckeyes come in.
So,
good morning, Coach.
How we doing, guys? Good morning. It's great to be with you on this beautiful Thursday of a game week. Right.
When was the last time you played a Friday night game at Northwestern?
Oh, Dave?
Well, we were reminiscing about that this week because played at Ford Field in Detroit against Eastern Michigan on a Friday night several years ago. And also, I think it was your first year, played at Nevada, Reno on a Friday night.
We did.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we did. We did. Like I said in my press conference, that was a special week. That was the week that Stacy gave birth to our son, Ryan. So, I don't remember one at Ryan Field. But,
no, there's never been one.
I remember a lot of them at Carl Sandburg High School. those were good times.
Yeah,
those
the Friday night lights, right? Yeah, of course.
But well, I've been pretty outspoken. I'm not excited about playing on a Friday. I do think it's for high school teams. But, hey, it's a schedule, and we're going to play it. And I hope our fans get up here early and travel safe and have a lot of fun, and we play our best game of the year. We're really close. I mean, as you've seen, we've improved over the last couple games, especially offensively. And my hope is we can continue to do that here as we get ready to play an outstanding team.
You played this team 10 months ago in the Big Ten championship game. Anything that you can take from that game going into this one?
Well, I think we gave ourselves an opportunity in the second half, and we made them play, a complete game, which they did not have to do a whole lot last year. You know, they did a week prior to our game against Maryland, and then three weeks earlier, and then they blew out Michigan. So we've got to make them play four quarters. They really haven't had to do that yet this year, and we've got to avoid the first round knockout, and we talked about that in the Big Ten championship game. Coach Day does an outstanding job with their offense. They've got weapons, all Big Ten, all American players at every position. So we've got to execute, control the ball on our side of the ball, and then we've got to take care of it. You know, our Achilles heel right now, yeah, we're not maybe putting up stats and all that offensively, but you can still win games when you're young on that side of the ball if you take care of it and not turn it over. Unfortunately, we have not, which has been our recipe for disaster. But as a team, we got to take it away, too. Defensively, we didn't get any turnovers last week, and you know, that really led to the outcome of the game.
I'm sure you heard or saw the comments by your counterpart at Ohio State. You just mentioned him, Ryan Day, who had been their offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach the last couple of years. And he said he was greatly influenced by Northwestern's offense in 2000 when the Wildcats won the Big Ten, and they basically changed college football. Randy Walker and Kevin Wilson with the spread offense. Do you see evidence of that in what Ohio State does now? And do you kind of sense that, Pat, around college football, that the influence of that team really did kind of change the game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And you know, you see a bunch of tenets of it. Our offense, we're not executing the way we want to, but yeah, there's no question it's all over. And you know, you go back, you know, Rich Rodriguez and a bunch of other coaches that I know, Wilson and Randy went and studied also. So you know, it's pretty cool. The game always evolves, and you know, to be you know, a part of this is really neat. So it'll be fun to see Kevin. You know, obviously we worked together for a number of years, and you know, a lot of respect from myself to him, and you know, look forward to competing.
Not including the one I'm about to ask you. What's the dumbest question you've been asked so far this week?
None. They're all enlightening. They all truly. I think work very hard and diligently to solve a lot of the world's issues, and I'm just trying to give an answer one at a time that will impact the world.
They improve humanity one step at a time. Listen, I'm looking forward to a 28-point dog beating these guys, because that's what's going to happen tomorrow night, Dave. You write it down.
I will write it down. I know that one thing is football is always a game of emotion every week, but I would imagine that your guys, and you mentioned the Friday Night Lights thing, and they've always enjoyed playing night games, but the fact that it is a Friday night and it's the only game going tomorrow night, and that it is so rare, I mean, that kind of ratchets it up even a little further, right?
Yeah, and then we got some sweet swag. We're Under Armour swag uniforms we're wearing tomorrow.
I'm pretty
stoked up about that. Yeah, I would have looked huge in a neck roll in the 90s in those sweet uniforms. But, you know, yeah, no, it's absolutely. I talked to the squad about it yesterday. You know, I go back even a little bit further for them, and I said, hey, remember when you were a little guy and you dreamed of playing on Fridays at your high school and you were behind the stands playing against your maybe neighborhood buddies or maybe the guys from the town over that you're going to go to high school with in grade school? And
sure.
You go up for the JV or sophomore game, depending on how it was in your community, and you'd get after those guys, and then you'd go probably stand along the fence and watch your buddy's older brothers or guys that you want to be someday, and that's Friday Night Football. And for our seniors, you know, and even those that go on to play in the NFL, and the NFL plays on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday, and then an occasional Saturday late in the season. But, you know, this is their last opportunity to play on a Friday night, and I want them to enjoy it. And, you know, just go play hard. We're getting better. They need to just keep on that track, just keep getting better. And, you know, we got a lot of ball ahead of us here, and definitely want to send our seniors out the right way. So that's been our focus.
Get a win, Coach.
Sounds like a plan. If we do, I doubt I'll sleep very much on Friday night. So I look forward to enjoying that with Dave. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think that sounds
My good. Hope is that you are not sleeping at all because you got a win.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, last time we were, you know, nobody gave us a chance. We went to South Bend, and, you know, we pulled the Dumb and Dumber out. You're saying there's a chance. So, you know, you never know. So,
well, a lot of people don't use that as an inspiration film, but that's why you're one of the best.
Yeah, if you can't use Dumb and Dumber to get inspired, you got problems. I mean, the adversity that Lloyd and Harry overcame when they lost the bird was amazing. It was an amazing
deal.
The fact
that you can mention the characters is very impressive. All right, Coach, thanks as always. Coach Fitz, Northwestern Ohio State tomorrow night. Go Cats.
All right, let's go. Go Cats. See you guys. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Dave, what was the last time Northwestern was a 28-point dog? Was it when you were in college?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's probably been more recent than that. Mm. I mean, that's the dark ages. but
when they played with no helmets.
Yes. But I can tell you that there have been times where Northwestern has been a big underdog. And look, last weekend, South Carolina was, I think, a 20-plus point underdog at Georgia.
And they won.
So you don't know.
Yeah, it's the old saying, Dave, on any given Friday night.
Okay, that's not really the same.
That's not really a saying.
If there's anyone listening that's a huge Coach Fitz fan, as everyone should be, there's a really cool article in the Chicago Tribune about his wife, Stacy.
Oh, really?
And their three sons who play football. It's really cool.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
How old are his kids now?
His oldest, Jack, is, I think he's a freshman.
Wow.
At Loyola. Mm-hmm. And then at Loyola Academy. And then he's got two younger
boys. Yeah, like a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old.
I didn't get a chance to insult him about how old he's getting.
Yeah, well, you can find that to me.
We'll save it for next week. A Republican and a Democrat live in studio. Pat Brady, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
How about you, Eric Edelstein?
I work at AL Media.
Nice to see both of you. How are you guys?
I'm doing well.
Any thoughts on the passing of Elijah Cummings?
It's very sad. He was a giant. I had a chance to spend a little bit of time with him. He was cut out of an old cloth where, you know, that sort of character that you don't come across a lot, who stood on principle, a politician, but somebody who did what he did for his community, and it's a big loss.
Believed in loyalty and friendships and actual honesty.
Yeah, he was a really wonderful man.
Pat Brady, this has been as tumultuous a week as there's been, which is hard to say, 1,001 days in, literally 1,001 days into the Trump administration. It seems things are being amped up all over. Where's it go from here?
Not sure, but they're talking impeachment trial, or at least in the House, by Thanksgiving. And I think the Democrats are rolling this out in a way, kind of like Watergate rolled out, where if you see the testimony, or at least what's being leaked to the testimony, it really shapes up. It's pretty clear that the president was self-dealing in our foreign policy with the Rudy Giuliani and the crew. So I don't know where it ends up, but I think the combination of these facts rolling out slowly and this idiotic decision to pull out of northern Syria has really got a lot of Republicans wondering where maybe it's not such a bad idea.
Is Giuliani, Eric, such a goofball at this point that Trump could throw him under the bus and save himself?
Well, only if you followed the pattern of the guy's first 72 years of his life, or however old he is. I mean, that's what he does, right? He attaches himself to people that he thinks can help him, and the minute they can't, he tosses them overboard. I'll tell you what, unless I read this wrong, the EU ambassador Sondland, who's supposed to be a Trump ally, looks like he's going to throw Trump under the bus.
He's a McCain guy. I mean, there's nobody going into these things, first of all, they're not even supposed to be there. The State Department's saying don't go, and they're going anyway.
Well, that's one of the surprises, right? Because Mike Pompeo was certainly a Republican, but a highly regarded Republican, and considered to be one of the better parts of the first wave of the Trump team.
He's number one from his class at West Point.
So what happened to him?
I don't know. I think there's somewhat, you get the Potomac fever when you get in close in proximity to the presidency, which is a powerful thing, and you'll do whatever you can to keep that spot, and he's got political ambitions. But here's an example. I know we talked, Chuck talked earlier about Congressman Kinzinger, but you know who else did it from Illinois? Congressman Shimkus. After the decision to pull out of Syria, he said, I do not support the president anymore. And he's a veteran and a West Point guy.
You know, I want to go back on something. You know, there's been this sort of sub-narrative that somehow Trump is some creative strategic genius.
No. Not a chance.
Right. But let's just describe this for a second. He has one firewall he's had for his entire presidency that's never been more important than ever, which are the Republicans in the Senate.
Yeah.
And to run out and do the Syria thing, which they are more upset about than anything, is the most idiotic, just purely on the politics. Forget the national security, the moral, the ethical, all that stuff. Just on the politics of it, it's inane.
Well, two things. He got rolled by Erdogan, and he's supposed to be the guy that sold himself on the art of the deal. He absolutely got rolled by Erdogan, and because Erdogan said, we're going to invade in 48 hours, and he's like, the tough guy, that's supposed to be the tough guy, talks tough on Twitter, but when it comes down to actually doing something.
My favorite two parts of that story of the White House meeting on Syria yesterday is Trump walks in, this is the White House briefing congressional leadership on the Syria situation. He walks in and he says, I didn't want this meeting, what do you want? And the leadership says, Mr. President, the White House invited us over here to do this. Oh, okay. Well, I want you to know, I wrote a very tough letter to Turkey. McCarthy read it, and he reads it, and the letter opens with, I'd like to make a really good deal with you.
The letter that he wrote was so ridiculous that national reporters on every level had to contact the White House to see if it was something from The Onion, because they thought it was a spoof. It's written in Trump speak. Some people might be attracted to that, but it's maybe the least presidential letter you'd ever see. All right, we'll get more into this as time goes on, but I also want to talk to you about the most important thing locally, and that's this, the strike of CPS schools. And what this means for the mayor, who is in the position of taking a hit or being a hero one way or another, and how long you think it'll last. And we continue with Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein. We'll do more of the school strike in a second as well. But right now, does look, you can't get, what's the old saying, blood from a stone. There's only so much money, and there's no money to go around. So how does the mayor find a way to make a deal here? Let me start with you, Eric.
Well, I think the mayor's tried to make a deal. I think she's dealing with an intransigent opponent. Look, of all the players in this situation, the mayor, the teachers, CPS, teachers union, there's only one entity that had the power to have this strike happen. One, and that's CTU. It's not the teachers. I know they authorized the strike and all that. And I think it's a horrible miscalculation. It's terrible for the city. I think it's ultimately bad for teachers. And I wish they didn't do it. And I, look, I'm a supporter of teachers unions. We do a lot of work with them. But I think this is really harmful to the city. I think the mayor offered them 16%. She's wanted to work with them. It just sort of seems like they haven't been negotiating in good faith. And I hope it doesn't last long. I worry a little bit that Sharkey's looking back at 2012 when he took them out, and he felt like, whether it's true or not, that Mayor Emanuel caved because he sort of panicked that the schools were shut down, that he's going to have to see the same thing. He underestimates her. He underestimates this mayor in a big way, if that's what he thinks.
Pat, I want to get your spin on this as well, but also in regards to the teacher side of this argument, which is, why can't we have librarians in school? Why can't we have nurses in school, which seems to be a big part of their argument? We'll get to that coming up right after the headlines.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
A full-on strike is on. Teachers are on the picket lines. We've got 300,000 CPS students not in school today. Pat Brady.
Well, that headline I just saw on WGN on the monitor here saying that the teachers have been offered, I don't know, 16% raises. They're all going to be making over 100, or average teacher making over 100 grand a year. I think that tends to be the story. And politically, you've got a mayor that's very popular. And I think most of the public understands the financial distress the city's under. And I'm not sure if the teachers necessarily made a good move going out right now.
But what about that counter argument, which is schools need librarians, schools need nurses?
Look, I'm sympathetic to the teachers, and they need all those things, and they need much more. And they need smaller class sizes, and I wish we could pay,
which is another part of the argument,
200 grand. But look, there's the world as you'd like it to be, and there's world as it is, and this mayor has a lot to juggle. The city has no money. And a 16% raise phased in over the course of this contract is not nothing. You know, I drove by one of the pickets today, and the teachers are smiling and they're laughing, and everyone think, you know, everyone's drinking their coffee and holding the pickets, and there's an energy to
that. Did they have a rat?
I didn't see Scabby the Rat, but
Scabby the Rat, I think, is being outlawed, right? Isn't that the story? Scabby
really?
The Rat? Yeah, Scabby, they're making
Why?
People not have, well, it's repulsive, but also, actually, I saw a rat that size once north of the north side.
Yeah.
But that's another story.
That's another story. There's a whole history of Scabby the Rat, by the way, which you should do a program at. But
don't you out-ADD me.
Sorry. What was I saying? No. So it's, you know, it's, there's a certain high, you know, everyone's at their battle stations and all that. But the longer it goes on, everybody loses, and it becomes
what I think you make a good point on who actually represents reality. I think Mayor Lightfoot and the way she behaves and the way she addresses every other issue, she seems to be the representative of reality. And I think most people, most voters understand that.
I think the teachers are losing in the court of public opinion. But just to give the counter argument to this, I mean, the $100,000 is, they'll make that, what, in 5 years based on the contract?
It's a 3%. It's a 3% a year.
Yeah. And they've said basically that they don't care about the salary. It's the issue. They're at the end, you know, they're at the wit's end. They feel like, you know, they've been screwed over every time by, you know, by the administration. And it seems like they keep saying that the city somehow finds money for other things in other places.
Yeah, but you know what? I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm just telling you their argument.
Jesse Sharkey knows better than that. There's money allocated for specific reasons, and how it's spent is done for specific reasons. And there's just so much money that can be spent on this particular problem, which is a huge problem. I would say politically, what sort of problem does Lori Lightfoot create for herself? Because you've got how many teachers? 35,000?
20,000.
20,000 teachers, yeah, who all know and love a lot of people.
Sure.
Who are probably in all likelihood on their side for this. So she has considerable risk here.
She does. I think, unlike, you know, other politicians, other previous mayors, I think the last thing she'll do is look at everything through a political lens. She just won't. She'll do what she thinks right for the city. And look, I don't necessarily agree that 20,000 teachers want to be on strike. And yes,
oh, I agree,
there was an authorization vote. And look, I want to be clear. I'm on the side of the teachers on many things, and I'm sympathetic to teachers. What I'm not on the side of is the CTU and the way they've done this. And I think everyone in the city can be sympathetic to teachers and not think there should be a strike. There's ways to work this out. I think the mayor has bent over backwards to try to do that. And I'm hopeful that, you know, Sharkey's not going to try to play this game that he thinks he's just going to get her to cave, because I don't think she would.
It's such a bigger problem. It's a societal problem, because it's, you know, teachers are playing nurse, they're playing parent, they're playing psychologist, they're
police officer.
Yeah, they're making sure the kids are fed, yeah, because they might not get a meal outside of school. There's so much going on.
No, we ask the teachers and the police to do jobs that are well beyond their abilities, and that's why you end up with these challenges, for sure.
So how long's it go?
I can't predict. I don't know. But
you
I don't
get feel for it, Pat?
I don't think it's going to be short.
Yeah, but I mean, not just that. Now we got a budget, and then there's issues trying to get this casino done. So the mayor's got a really full plate.
Does she is her quiet confidence a positive, or does she need to message this thing a little more boisterously? I mean, does she have that in her?
I like the calm. Especially, this is the way it's going to be, because, like you just said, she's not looking through this, and I agree with Eric, through a political prism. It's like, what's the right thing to do? And not just the right thing to do for the teachers, but the rest of the city that's paying the taxes. And I think there is a balance to be struck there, and I think she has the most credibility in establishing that balance.
And everything's in context. Look at in the context of Trump in this moment of hyperbole and spectacle. I think her sort of low-key, not being over the top, is something that people welcome.
She won all but 20 precincts. She's got a lot of people that believe in what she's doing.
Let me get a couple of callers in here. This is Frank. Good morning, Frank.
Hey, thank you very much. You have a good day now. Good morning, Steve. Listen to your show nearly every morning. Great
thank
show.
You. Thank you.
One question I'd like to have addressed is that I find it sad and kind of disappointing that, for example, when the Cubs go to the playoffs or, you know, are in the World Series and they're playing at home, the city doesn't hesitate to drop $1 million in overtime to police the streets to keep our city safe. But when it comes down to educating our children, we have to scrounge and collect pennies to fund salaries of the teachers that take care of our children and educate our children for the future. And it's just very sad and disappointing that it's almost at like our education level, our priorities are in the garbage.
Appreciate that, Frank, and thank you for the call. Thank you for listening. I hear that argument a lot, and I also hear the same sort of question on why parents continue to have fundraisers for kids in schools for events that schools ought to be able to pay for. So what about allocating funds and how the money is being spent by the people in charge?
Well, this is a broader issue than just CPS. This has to do with American culture and American society and how we value teachers, and that, you know, 20 of the biggest hedge fund managers make more money than every kindergartner teacher in this country combined. So it's a bigger problem than just the city of Chicago, and I agree with the caller. We should value teachers more. They should be paid like they are in a lot of other Western countries, where they make as much or closer to what people who run companies make. But we don't do that in this country, and now you have a situation in the city of Chicago where you know, we don't just pay pennies to the school system. It's one of the most funded.
Where'd you go?
Yeah, right. Most funded entities we have, but there's never enough money to go around. And again, it's the world as it is versus how we'd like it to be.
Pat, address how that money is spent in a second, if you would, plus whatever else is on your mind. I know where you went.
The details of what CPS spends it on?
No, I'm just saying there are conditional priorities that are made for allocating funds at various times, and there's nuancing to all of this that goes on. So I don't know if it's as simple as saying we don't spend $1 million the next time there's a sports parade. There's more to it than that.
Yeah, but also probably, and Eric's touching on it, the bigger question is, and it's not just a city of Chicago problem, it's a statewide problem, and there's actually been some progress made on this by the governors, how we do fund the schools. Property taxes, should it be state income tax? And because there is a disparity and the wealthy areas get more funding because it's based on property values than the poorer areas. So it's a very, I think, much more complicated issue than just taking $1 million for the Cubs.
Hold on, callers, if you can, more in a moment. 7:50, and Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady are here. Let me get Linda in here from Oak Forest, been hanging on for a while. Linda, go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to weigh in here, and I'm going to kind of go out on a limb a little bit because I have done both professions full-time for a number of years. I was a teacher for a number of years at all different levels. I mean, K through 8, even taught college. Now I'm a nurse, so I guess I feel like I can speak to both professions. So And I'm also a mom and a grandma, so I support teachers, but I just, with all my heart, I truly feel this is not the right time. And if you, maybe this is not the right way to look at it, but if you look at the two professions, okay, I'm saving lives, teachers are educating people, I'm sorry, but saving lives, that's like life and death. Teachers work 9 months out of the year, and I read a recent thing in the newspaper that we nurses are making about the same as teachers. Now, that's not fair. I work 12 months a year. I'm saving lives. Look at the training, too. And again, this may not be popular to say, it's way, way, way harder. The nursing program and trying to become a nurse, it's just much more rigorous and much more difficult.
Well, I salute your experience and the fact that you've done all of that, and I appreciate the perspective as well. I think what teachers would say is we hear that argument all the time, and unless you walk in our shoes and what the CPS has asked us to do in a position we're in, you don't fully understand it. So I'm just trying to give the other side of that. Pat, what about the money piece here?
In what respect?
In regards to the city being able to afford to settle this?
Well, that's the big issue, because it ties in. Now we have the big budget coming up here shortly, and it's, what, $800 million in the hole? So that is, and that's what I'm saying about the reality check of what we can actually do for teachers, given what resources we have, and I think the mayor represents that well. But I think, and I got to credit my friend John Musgrave, who's a former CPS teacher out in Morris, who just texted me, said the political thing, too, is that the kids have a place to go. And the mayor's been smart to keep that going because you don't want this crisis where you have kids around, parents that can't go to work. And I think that may actually end up lengthening the strike just because it won't be such a crisis. But I think that was a smart thing politically to do.
I mean, it does. We talked about this last week. The problem is the trickle-down effect. The single parents who have to take care of kids, the employers who have to run businesses without their employees, the kids running around the streets. And while there are places for kids to go to some extent, I don't think it's universal, and I don't think it's the same as them being in school every day. And so the longer it goes, the worse it just is for everyone. I don't think
it's a bad thing. It's impeachment's a bad thing. Strikes are a bad thing. Right. It's dysfunction.
And again, I want to say it. I'm for the teachers. I don't think a strike is good for the teachers. I don't think it gets them to an outcome that's going to be any better than if they sat down and negotiated.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If they're, because, and I say this as a union member for 30 plus years, it never has to go this deep. It never has to go to the 11th hour. It always goes to the 11th hour. Isn't that both sides' fault?
It can be in a lot of situations. In a lot of situations, management's intransigent and sort of calls their bluff. I think in this situation, this is all on CTU. CTU decided to take them out. I think the mayor would have sat there all night, days in a row, to get this thing done.
You know, politically, too, and we were talking last week about the politics of this, the two examples where I remember in 1980 when the air traffic controllers went on strike and Reagan fired them. And people were screaming and yelling, but he had the authority to do that. It was an unauthorized strike. And politically, he came out the big winner, whereas I think in the teacher strike in 2012, I think the mayor actually did not come out as well in the way he handled it. So it's a politically risky thing on both sides. And I agree with Eric. I think that the teachers union may have overstepped here.
So how does it end?
I don't know. I mean, the problem you have, I think, is you're gonna have two stubborn sides where Sharkey, I think his point of view is, oh, the longer it goes, the worse it's for the mayor because it looks like she can't run the city. And the mayor's going to be sitting there saying, I got a whole city to run, and I've made a reasonable offer, and people think it's a reasonable offer, and I can't get blood from a stone. And so, you know, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to take cops off the street? Do you want me to shut down other facilities that people rely on in the city? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as if she's being the Grinch here and doesn't want to help teachers. She's bending over backwards to help teachers.
I think, like, the teachers right now, they're kind of going for bigger, like, social justice issues. And you know, I think in the long run, in terms of a PR game for the public, that's harder to explain than necessarily saying, like, how do I, you know, it's harder to explain your social justice issues and why you want them right. than it is to explain, like, you know, my kid doesn't have anywhere to go, or I might lose my job if I, you know, can't go in because I have to stay home because I don't have childcare.
You know, but that goes to the affordable. We only got less than 2 minutes here, but the affordable housing piece mm-hmm. of this—that is way too big a cultural argument to fold into this discussion, isn't it?
Yeah, much too big. But you know what would be interesting, Steve, is to see the mayor at her budget address really lay out. Here's what we spend money on.
I agree.
Here's where the 100%. Deficit is. What would you guys like me to do?
Right.
I mean, not in a sort of like, I mean, I got hired for the job and I have to do it, but sort of say, like, guys, here's what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And
reality.
I don't know what the teachers want me to do.
Because the teachers' argument is always they find money other
right.
places.
Here
or they
it
give
is.
Corporations huge, you know.
Right. But like, just put all the cards on the table and say, here's all the money, guys. And here's what we're spending it on. What would you like me to spend it on, if not these things?
But the union always relies on the money fairy.
Right. Oh, they could just make it up. They could just print money in the basement.
Money fairy will come in.
Print money in the basement.
Yeah. Look at where we are in the state.
Yeah, it's the same. And there's a bigger, maybe this is too much into the weeds, but the intersection of politics and budget and what's good for the state and in the city when you have the union so heavily involved in the political process. It's kind of a conflict of interest kind of thing with the amount of money they give to politicians. I'm not saying the mayor, but it's just it's not a good system. And ends up the school kids.
Well, see, that's the problem. The pile has gotten so high and the system is so broken of all the things that have to be fixed. Everybody goes, oh, I need to lay down for a while. There's too many things that need to be fixed. You need to focus right now on getting the kids back in school as fast as possible and getting the teachers back to work. What do you need to do to get that done? That's it.
Yeah.
Everything else needs to fall to the wayside.
Well, at least we have Trump.
And on that note, thank you, Eric Edelstein. Thank you, Pat Brady.
And Eric will always have Trump.
It's a new T-shirt. We'll always have Trump.
Looking at you, Eric.
It's coming up next, and then it's Warren Entertainment. First this.
The kids in Chicago are everywhere, except school. The latest on the strike.
Plus, Blackhawks Stanley Cup champion Dave Boland is being honored Friday night. We'll honor him first after 6. It's The Rokan Show.
With Anna DeVlantis.
This afternoon at 3.
On 720 WGN.
Hi, folks. Orion here with a question. Are you finding yourself a little spooked about buying a new Cadillac this month? Well, I can tell you, the buying experience is not scary at Gary Lang Cadillac in McHenry. At Gary Lang, your Cadillac will come with all kinds of treats and no tricks. The sales professionals at Gary Lang Cadillac are spooktacular. They'll go above and beyond to make sure you're well-versed on the bells and whistles in your new vehicle. In fact, they'll bring your new Cadillac right to your doorstep for a test drive. Trust me, folks, I've been a part of the Gary Lang Cadillac family for over a decade. They are a name you can trust to find you the right car at the right price and right now with service you can depend on. Go to GaryLangCadillac.com, Gary Lang Cadillac on Route 31 between McHenry and Crystal Lake. And remember, if it doesn't say Gary Lang on the back, you probably paid too much.
I didn't ask this person from area code 219 to send me a text the other day, but 219 did. John, that's me, John Williams. I went to the Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park last week. The insurance specialist was incredible, and I had my first treatment. Thank you for your recommendation! Exclamation point. The staff was so friendly and professional. Close quotes. I'm so glad to hear that, 219. Wherever you are, if you have knee pain, then you should contact the Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park and in Oak Brook, too. Here's why they're so good. The best technology. They use advanced digital imaging to see where your knee is failing you. A caring staff. These people are so friendly and helpful. Precision and care. This is all they do. Joint Relief. I want you to send me a happy text someday, too, after you first go to jointreliefinstitute.com. Jointreliefinstitute.com. Or call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
News time in just a second. Some texters chiming in. Actually, a ton of texters chiming in. We'll get some of these as the morning rolls on. I believe we even have giant inflatable rat news as well, with the giant inflatable rat being part of this. This story, too. 630, Parap, teachers should take less pay raise, 8% to afford smaller class sizes and additional personnel. How much did the marathon cost the city? And on and on. And Texas says you just blew the lady off. She was a teacher and a nurse. Who do you think speaks better on a subject? She had 3 minutes. And she's a lovely lady. And I hope she doesn't feel blown off. But 815, you're wrong. Go lay down for a while.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than
go. More on entertainment. 809. Dean's back from New York. How was that?
I thought maybe we would strike and not do the segment today.
That's the hope of listeners far and wide, that we would go out.
Work stoppage.
Yes. Imagine how small our picket line would be. There'd be me. There'd be you.
I'd be there.
There'd be our apprentice, John DeCoste.
I'd be there.
That's it. That's the list.
That's a sad picket line right there.
Not good.
What do we want? When do we want it?
How about this? What do we want? We don't know. When do we want it? Let's say after lunch.
Can I suggest to anyone going on strike in the future, can you please find some other chant? Why does it have to be the what do we want, when do we want it chant every single time? Come up with a little something new.
What do we want? The stuff we already told you.
As musical director, I could probably write one for the three of us. I'll do it.
Contact John for a small fee. He'll be happy to write you a new.
Then I wouldn't have to go on strike. You'd be on your own.
Yeah.
Is there a good song about striking?
Good. Oh, I don't know. That's a good one.
Yeah, there's probably some U2 epic ballad.
Yeah.
Rock opera thing.
From the movie Hoffa, maybe?
Wow.
You gotta start your own business. Strike jingles. Come on, John.
Yeah. Sorry.
Why not? Dean's got Jonah Hill news, Blake Shelton news, and a very bizarre story about, is it Ron Ely?
Yes.
Ron Ely, who played Tarzan for a few years, and Paul Rudd as well. How was your New York trip?
New York was lovely. Mm-hmm. I love being in New York in the fall. It's nice and crisp and cool. You can smell the fresh garbage that they leave on the street.
And actually, it's less funky than it is in the summer. The seasons of smells in New York, in the winter, most things are frozen.
Yeah.
Springtime, it starts to break through its shell, and the odoriferous side of New York becomes more apparent. Summertime, don't get on the wrong side of the stench.
Yeah, really, get an oxygen tank.
Right. And then fall, things are starting to close up again, so it's okay. But again, we know this. What does it come down to, Dean? It comes down to alleys versus no alleys. They take the garbage, they put it in front of their business.
It's actually very interesting that the garbage is out. Often I'll go to see a movie at night when I'm there in the evening, and I'll walk back to the hotel, and the garbage is out on the street at 9 o'clock at night, everywhere. Garbage bags everywhere. You wake up in the morning, 6, 7 o'clock, everything's gone.
Yep. Yep. And by the way, that's why after 9 p.m., from 9 p.m. till about 2 a.m. is rat rush hour in Manhattan.
Right.
So be careful if you're there.
Right. In Central Park, you can actually pay $25 and take a ride on a rat. get the kids. Sometimes you just want to take a picture
mommy,
of them.
Mommy, sitting on I want to go on the rat. I want to go on the rat.
But there's nothing more romantic than getting one of those buggies pulled
being
by,
tugged by two giant New York City rats.
A couple of giant rats. If there's no pizza on the street, it's a lovely ride.
It's a sweet, sweet time. What do you think about it? There's what? Is it 11 million people in Manhattan?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's an island. Right. And every time I'm in New York and I have trouble getting around, I go, what am I bitching about? None of this makes mathematical sense. There's no way you could have all this this amount of people in this small space and have it work.
Somehow it does.
Work would be an operative term.
Work-ish.
Yeah, work-ish.
Yeah.
Don't try to get across town unless you got a couple of weeks to do it.
How long did you live there?
Just a couple of years.
Did you find that it changed your personality?
I was a delight before then.
I'm only there for a few days, and just after a few days, it's like, okay, it's time for me to leave.
I think New York has the same vacation tolerance that Las Vegas has. I think it's a two-day trip.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very, very good comparison.
You go to 3, 4, and 5 days in Las Vegas, you start to get depressed. You start to just wander the streets aimlessly. Looking for a discounted ticket for Siegfried or Roy, whichever one is left.
You know what they say about New York? What happens in New York usually has a story about a rat.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's the actual saying.
Is that the phrase that goes?
That was the original saying.
Is that the original saying?
Original saying, it got trimmed down.
Now, I have a legitimate question for you, Dane, and I rarely do this. How is Broadway in Chicago in comparison to Broadway in New York in regards to ticket sales and things of that nature? Because Broadway in New York went through a period of time, even with all the tourists, where, you know, some shows that you would expect to work didn't work, where it seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Broadway in Chicago always gets a nice run of shows that right. seem to have theaters fill up. Is that true or not true?
That is true. A couple of things here. Broadway in Chicago has far fewer shows than actual Broadway in New York. I mean, Broadway in Chicago is maybe five or six, maybe seven tops, something like that. On Broadway, there's 30, 40 theaters.
Legitimate theaters. Okay.
In the right in Midtown Manhattan, where the actual Broadway theaters are. But they did go through a tough period in there because the shows weren't that great, because the economy was tough, and tickets are expensive. I mean, if you want to go see a decent show in New York, you should expect to pay between $150 to $200 a ticket. That's a lot of money, I think, to see a show. But the shows are great right now. I mean, there's some top-notch shows. There are always Tony Award winners. There are Tony Award winners all the time. But exceptional shows there. So people are going, and they don't mind paying. They have what would be the equivalent of our hot ticks that we have here, where you can buy discounted tickets. In New York, they have something called TKTS. And people wait in line for hours in front of the TKTS store. It's right in the middle of Broadway and Times Square to get reduced tickets, you know, tickets that are unsold. So they sell them at reduced prices to people so they can go to the shows. But you go to Times Square, it's packed. I don't even like going to Times Square unless I'm going to see a show, because you can't get anywhere. There's too many people, too much vehicular traffic, but mostly just, you know, people going to shows and hanging out. And, they've made it a big tourist destination. Makes you long for the day, Steve, when Times Square, you know, you could just walk around the used syringes that were on the street.
Sure.
Dodging
when I first started going to New York, like 35 years ago, probably, I knew I couldn't afford a ticket, and they were about $4 at that point. Now, if you want to go to New York, unless you've planned ahead, which, by the way, is something I don't do or believe in, if you've planned ahead, you're probably in good shape. But if not, do they scalp tickets? I mean, is there some guy out in front of the theaters in New York going, hey, who needs two, huh?
You know what? Honestly, I don't see scalpers out there now that you mention it. Maybe the police monitor it a little more heavily than they do.
Hey, I got Sound of Music, two here. Up front. Who needs two?
And Les Mis. Who needs Les Mis?
At the Les Miserables. All right, we'll come back, do the list here in just a second.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Rich.
8:21 now, back to Dean. This is More on Entertainment, because I'm one and he's one.
Steve, happy National Pasta Day, by the way.
Was that today?
It is today, yes.
I got you some Fusilli. Should I just drop it off at Channel 9?
Do you know how much I love my Fusilli?
Yeah. John, do you have a favorite pasta?
I think it's pasta fagioli.
And what?
What did he call me?
Dave, do you have a favorite pasta?
Is it gnocchi?
Don't you? Gnocchi.
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 Yeah.
Gnocchi.
Gnocchi.
Yeah, you want to say the G, yep.
Just sorry.
And technically, I don't think gnocchi is a pasta because that's
it's a dumpling.
It's a dough made out of potatoes.
Because I'd never had it before I was in Italy. Summer. It was really good.
It's
good.
You know what you might want to do when you're in Italy? Pop over to Greece and have the gyros, too, while you're having the gnocchi.
Okay. I was going to say, veal parmigiana is good.
Yeah, that's very true.
What did you call me?
Ooh.
What?
Racy.
Do you have a favorite pasta?
Bucatini. I like the hole inside of the pasta.
That's from Star Wars.
I love it.
Bucatini. This whole segment is going to end up on Nick's show.
Where you get the sauce inside of the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Dean knows what I'm talking about.
Let me go to our official show, Italian, Super Joe.
How are we doing?
What's the best pasta?
Well, I love farfalle, you know. I like the bow tie one.
Isn't that the guy you went to school with, Farfalle? Hey, Bobby Farfalle!
My dude. But yeah, and then obviously anything that's stuffed. So you got to love tortellini and ravioli.
Mm-hmm. Manicotti. Mm-hmm. Love a manicotti. You know where I love? I was trying to think if there's a place where, you know, that my favorite pasta, and there are so many great Italian places, but right around the corner from where we used to be in the old dump at Tribune Tower.
Yes.
It was a Volari restaurant.
Oh, that's a great restaurant.
There.
It's a great restaurant.
Homemade pasta, homemade sauces.
Yeah.
It is definitely one of the best Italian restaurants in the city.
And tremendous service.
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
One of those, there about a month ago for lunch. It was great.
It's tremendous. Yeah. And tables packed in. You're sitting with people you don't even know. I sat on a guy's lap for 3 hours.
What's nice, they have a beautiful outdoor area.
Yeah, they do.
In the summertime, you can sit out there, and the waiters are great and attentive. Even the rats out on the street are...
and their little Italian berets.
Yeah, they have the little gondolas that they put the rats in. It's nice.
Do the waiters sing Volare?
They should. They definitely should.
Definitely.
Jonah Hill news.
It was rumored to be... in talks to be in the Batman movie that's going to be, they're going to start filming at the end of this year, early next year.
This is the one where Gilbert Gottfried is the new Batman?
This one is practically Gilbert Gottfried as Batman. It's Robert Pattinson from the Twilight movies as Batman.
Is he a big guy? I don't see him filling out the suit.
He's a tall guy. He's a tall drink of water, but he's not a big muscular guy. Well, you know, maybe he'll work on that between now and then. But Jonah Hill was in talks to be the villain in that movie. And yesterday it was announced that he will not be in the movie. They did not give a reason why that's not going to happen, but he's not going to be attached to it. Zoe Kravitz was just signed to play Catwoman in the movie.
It would be good, though, if Jonah Hill was like the first ever slightly pudgy, nebbish Robin who couldn't really keep up and maybe had an inhaler.
Yeah, that would...
Like when Batman was running across town, he had to stop because he had an inhaler in his pocket.
Right. Hey, slow down. Hey, if we're going to climb up this building, I need a minute.
Yeah, can't we take an Uber to the next crime? all right, now this Ron Ely story is horrific. I don't specifically remember Ron Ely as Tarzan. I remember him being on game shows and stuff as being Tarzan.
Yeah, the Tarzan series was only an original production for 2 years, 66 to 68, but it ran in reruns forever.
Okay.
And he was Tarzan.
Good-looking, muscled-up dude, right?
Very good, and still, you know, he's in his late 70s now, early 80s. Still a very, you know, good-looking dude. But yesterday, his son murdered his mother in their home. Ron Ely.
To be Ron Ely's wife?
That's correct. Yeah. Ron Ely's wife. The son murders his mom. The police show up. Apparently, he posed some threat to the police, and he was shot dead. The son himself also was shot dead. All of this happening in the home as Ron Ely is there. So,
any situation like previous mental health problems, I assume?
Haven't heard anything like that, no, but I haven't heard any backstories on any of this, only this horrific incident took place.
Blake Shelton coming to town?
Blake Shelton is is announcing a new concert tour. It will be stopping at the Allstate Arena. on March 19th. Tickets are going to go on sale a week from tomorrow at 10 a.m. at the box office and their Ticketmaster and all that sort of thing. Supporting acts, Lauren Elena, the Bellamy Brothers, John Anderson, and Trace Adkins. He's also got a new album that's going to be coming out December 13th, just in time for holiday shopping.
You got to see the clip Dean is playing all morning on TV of Paul Rudd talking about his new Netflix series. You got a nice vibe with him and Paul Rudd talking about being buried alive as Can't Miss TV on Channel 9 this morning.
I'm going to watch it. Boy, you make it sound so much more attractive than it really is.
Well, again, you've been on Moron Entertainment. Thank you, buddy.
See ya.
All right, 8:38. I'm going to get back to these texts on the teacher strike shortly. But there's a book here. We've been talking about getting this book on the show for a while, and Vivian booked him the other day. The author is Emily Flake. The book is That Was Awkward. The Art and Etiquette of the Awkward Hug. Before I pick up the phone with Emily, shouldn't the hug always be initiated by the female, and then we would avoid the awkward, or not so much? I'm asking.
I don't think that all hugs are like between. I think this is a general awkward hug that can be between, you know, friends or like strangers or like.
Is it awkward when a woman hugs you that you're not expecting to hug you? Or is it not awkward because it's female to female? See, or is it awkward in a different way?
I think Viv and I are both kind of huggers.
We are.
I don't think we find people approaching us to hug us awkward because we tend to hug people that we don't know as well. Yeah.
You're out hugging strangers.
We left like, and right. Yeah. Hug them.
Well, let me get Emily in here, and I'm going to get Vandeveld in on this as well, because the less we hear from men on this topic, the better, other than trying to explain it. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
All right. So how do you come to your knowledge of awkward hugging, Emily? Is this a lifetime amount of work for you?
Yeah, this is 42 years of being a very awkward person, but also a hugger. So the two things don't necessarily mesh that well.
We know someone who used to be on this show regularly, who's now a big shot in management. I can't say who. It was Mary Sandberg, who doesn't appreciate the hug. Especially one that seems to be foisted upon her. I also have a friend who would announce that she was being hugged like she was a hostage. Oh, we're hugging. Yes. We're hugging. Which was the other word for help. So you have laid out in That Was Awkward, the art and etiquette of the awkward hug, every possible hug imaginable.
You know, I thought I got all of them, but since I have been writing and published this book, people have come up to me with hugs I wouldn't have even thought existed. Like, I feel like there might be enough material for like two or three of these.
All right. So recent exes, a long-term relationship, maybe they get along. Do they hug?
You know, I feel like when you're in a situation where there's just so much history and baggage with people, but you're so familiar with their body, that's one of those, like, multi-flavored hugs. Like, there's a lot going on there. I think you can hug, but it's not going to be good.
How about you used to fool around in college?
That's kind of one of my favorites, because that's like a time machine hug. You know, it's like you get back into this familiarity of this person and kind of the person you used to be. And, you know, there's no, you can't go home again, but you can visit.
I'm glad that we're talking to you.
That's a good one.
I'm glad that we're talking to you now, because, you know, the awkward hug thing becomes very prevalent, especially with the holidays, office, office work, you know, work parties. So,
alcohol involved.
So I'm
no. It's hugging season. Yeah. We're doomed.
It's hugging season. How should what, Jing?
No, I was saying, you know, prepare us. What do we need to know as we enter this
hugging season?
Suit of armor, possibly a suit of armor.
I mean, I would say that, like, the most important thing is to remember that it's always okay to ask somebody, like, can I hug you? Like I said, I am an enthusiastic hugger, but I'm also sort of afraid people will sense how much I want to be hugged. You know, like, I'm sort of like a needy golden retriever.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think it's okay just to like have that little pause. Like, is it okay if I hug you?
Emily, I wish that worked for me, but I'm Greek, and if I were to ask for permission to hug someone, they would look at me with a side eye, like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Like, this is like a known thing.
Well, the other thing is there's a certain...
I feel like if you're Greek, you have ethnic dispensation.
Like. Oh, it's like papal dispensation, it's just ethnic.
Yeah.
Now, Emily, I would say this. There is far too much credit given by females to males in regards to our intelligence and our ability to sense a situation. Because let me explain to you what goes on in our head. Girl, hug. That's it. That's the entire thing since caveman times. So I think it's expecting too much for us to go, hey, could I give you a hug? Unless it's some sort of sympathetic hug because you're upset about something.
Like, if the past few millennia has taught us nothing, it's that we're always willing to give you the benefit of the doubt that, you know, that you can overcome your reptile brain.
Yeah. And I'm here to tell you we can't.
Yet again, yeah. Disappointed.
Yeah. Mary Vanderbilt, where are you on hugging?
I'm good with it. I mean, I just came from my 40th high school reunion, and I think I hugged almost everybody there. I didn't have an issue. But what I want to know, Emily, does your book deal with the history of hugging, and why has it changed so much, like, with younger people? Like, guys, boys, I mean, you know, in their 20s or whatever, are always hugging each other now. And that never used to be.
I think it's because we've shifted away a little bit from this sort of, you know, 50s ideal of, like, men don't hug or show emotion. Like, you're supposed to be some sort of, like, man robot. And I think that that's, you know, that's a net good. If we can teach men it's okay to, like, feel feelings and hug, then, you know, maybe they won't have to be so angry all the time.
All right. Can I ask you about another awkward one? What about the tall girl, short guy hug?
Yeah.
Notice I even said it kind of quietly in case I didn't want everyone to hear it. The tall girl, shorty hug.
Yeah, that is an awkward one. Even between like two women, that could be a little bit awkward. So I think you just kind of have to turn your face to the side and concentrate on the middle section and try to pretend your head isn't where it is.
Right, because
which is my advice for everything.
So, but if you're a tall woman and you have a short guy, don't you automatically go to the side? Because otherwise, it's a complete boob slam right in the dude's head.
Right. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of ways to skin that particular cat. I mean, maybe we should just call a full handshake on that one.
Hello, Bob. All right, you've got a couple others here. What's the flirty friend hug?
So the flirty friend hug is, I feel like everybody has one of these people in their circles who is flirty and attractive and really focuses on you, but, you know, they're in a relationship and they're not cheaters. So they just have this way of making you feel very special and attractive, but it's not that you're special and attractive. It's just, that's the vibe they give off. And my only advice there is, like, don't take a hug from them too seriously, and definitely do not kiss their ear by accident.
You mentioned we're in holiday party season. Outside of not going to the holiday party, what do you advise?
I mean, I feel like I'm the worst person to give advice on this. Like, I'm a freelancer, and I still manage to make a fool of myself at, like, many, many office parties. Because it's this terrible mix of, like, you know, you're in a new context with people you already know, and you're also drunk. So I have found myself not just giving hugs, but, like, I'm like, I think we had a really great deep conversation, and waking up with, like, what did I say? I don't know. I feel my advice is, like, don't drink too much, but nobody's going to follow that. That's not the point of office parties.
Right. Well, I think the hard part of that is because you're already feeling awkward. You feel like you need a drink to take the edge off, and then that's, you know, it's a slippery slope. Because you are feeling so weird, you know, hanging out with your coworkers outside of work and seeing them in a new light. I think the one hug that's always kind of safe is the side hug. I feel like if you kind of don't use both arms, just use one arm.
Right.
Yeah, right. Oh, go ahead, Emily. Sorry.
Sorry. I think that is a good alternative. I feel like where that gets weird is that whole Christian side hug thing. Like, there's something inherently sinful about a front-to-front hug. Like, I think that takes that perfectly good solution and makes it super weird. Because then you have to wonder, like, if somebody gives you a side hug, if they're later going to start giving you pamphlets.
Yeah, well, there's that. Viv?
I was just going to ask you, what do you consider the perfect hug, whether you know the person very well or don't?
I think if you know the person very well and they are also kind of on the same page with you in terms of, like, physical affection, somebody that you can just kind of, like, sink into in this sort of, like, cloud of platonic bliss is my ultimate hug.
You also lay out in the book hug-free zones. Mm-hmm. These are places you should never hug. The gym, because you're both sweaty. The sauna or the steam room. Yeah, that seems right.
Yeah,
there's no hugging there, including no bro hugging, slap on the backs. The crowded elevator. I have to say, outside of maybe seeing a friend you haven't seen in a long time, I don't know why you'd be hugging anybody in an elevator. That's just survival in there.
Right. I feel like anywhere where you're supposed to just sort of retreat inside yourself and pretend you're not there is a good place to not hug. You know, like in line for the DMV, like, you know, any place where, like, in a sauna, like, even though you're naked in front of people, you're kind of in this space between present and not present where, like, if everybody acknowledged that they had bodies that didn't have clothes on right then, it would get super weird. So you just kind of have to pretend that this isn't happening.
Yeah, Dave.
Okay.
The last time I go on a sauna with you. And then there's the customer client hug, which is, yeah, you guys, you're the customer, the client. I think it's different on either side.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And I mean, there's so many customer client relationships where you already have a history of touching, you know, I mean, like your hairdresser or the woman who does your manicures, you know, they already, you sort of breached the physical barrier anyway, so it feels like a hug could feel natural, but I don't know. When I waitress, I used to hug my customers, but that, I don't know. That's just me. Maybe I was setting a bad precedent.
Emily, the one hug that always bothers me and makes me feel insecure is the hug that comes with a pat, like kind of you're just being patted.
That's the dude hug. You know, like I'll hug a guy, a couple of pats on the back, and break.
It doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel as warm to me.
Yeah, especially if a pat on the butt.
Well, that's a totally different thing.
Yeah, the reach around, I think, is too much, yeah.
I think the pat, the people who end a hug with a pat, I feel like it's just kind of trying to put some punctuation on it, like, okay, this is over now. And sometimes it feels like they are doing that because they can't wait for the hug to be over. So I agree, it does add a certain level of remove from a hug.
Well, let's solve,
but I get why people do it.
Let's solve one thing right now. For holiday parties, just a general company policy, whether it's here or anywhere else, one group hug at the end of the night. Everybody's still standing, get in one giant circle, and there's a hug. And it's not a rugby scrum. You can't be underneath touching things you're not supposed to be touching. Just one group hug and break. Now go to your cars and go home.
So everybody is equally miserable and probably comes away with life.
Isn't that what life's all about?
Yeah.
The book is called That Was Awkward. It's the art and etiquette of the awkward hug. Emily Flake, you're very funny and you're very entertaining, and I believe you're performing a service for society. Where do we get the book?
You can get it wherever fine books are sold, whether that is your local independent bookstore or Amazon.
All right, go buy this and get a second copy in case you lose the first one. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you very much.
There you go. I'll give you a hug, but you're not here. That's Emily Flake. I've never actually hugged someone on the phone. Here you go.
Yeah, it's a virtual hug.
Mm. All right, it is 8:54. I want to get to a few of these texts. Let's see, 224. I love you. I love your show. But you did cut off the nurse. No, God, here we go. I got a handful of texts about this. There was a woman on earlier who was a teacher and then became a nurse. And she made the point on multiple occasions during the phone call that being a nurse was harder, more taxing, and they weren't paid any more than teachers were, who were 3 months less. After she had made the point and repeated the point a couple of times, I chose to move on. And I said at the time, I appreciate your perspective from both jobs. I didn't feel like there was any even remotely cutting her off. But I apologize if she felt that way. Everybody else, I hope you listen a little closer. So I don't know what else to say about that. At any rate, I support teachers, but I babysit for their kids for years for $3 an hour. I know what time they got off, and I know some of them who sit by the pool all summer long. Well, okay, anecdotally. There were a lot of those type of texts that are coming in saying the teachers aren't working hard enough. I think that's really hard to say, regardless of your personal experience. 219, I live in Indiana, so I'm a spectator wishing the city a speedy connection on this. My two cents involves people in general. The focus is quickly diverted off the blazing fire and out of the time you allowed or didn't allow someone to speak. Laugh out loud. I know this goes without saying, but Steve, you're the gift that keeps on giving. Ha! I think that's a positive. No one gets everything they want, says the 630. It's all about compromise. 219, my husband teaches at a very rough school in the far south suburbs. Teachers come from CPS and tell him that his very worst students there could be the cream of the crop where they are at CPS. I think CPS needs more support staff and less talk about the raises. And there are a ton of people that have texted in and said teachers should give up a portion, if not all, of their raise to have the staff. And I don't agree with that at all. Teachers deserve the raise. The raise amounts to a 3% cost of living over the next 5 years. You ought to be able to figure out a way to have the money spent in the city so that you could have nurses in schools and have the teachers be paid what they deserve to be paid. And time to have a judge order CTU and CPS to go to an arbitrator. It may end up there anyway. More of these as time allows. We'll get to the news next. Troy Murray's coming up. Troy in studio or on the phone? Troy's going to join us by phone. Big night tonight at the UC, Dave.
Or tomorrow.
Well, tonight's a big night, too. There's a bunch of people hanging out there getting ready for tomorrow night.
The Bulls will be there tonight.
Yeah, well, good luck to the Bulls. I was pulling for the Bulls.
Sorry. I don't want people showing up for the game.
It's going to be a big night tonight for the Bulls, getting ready for the bigger night tomorrow night for the Blackhawks.
There you go.
Ooh, that was close. News time now on the Steve Cochran Show, and I'll go soak my head. My friend Troy Murray standing by on the phone, sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. And I'm a Chevy, you're a Chevy. Wouldn't you like to be a Chevy, too? As I was tooling in the White Lightning this morning, I was thinking, well, that's cool. Troy's going to be on today. Troy's a Chevy guy, too. All the cool kids are driving the Chevys. And I'm holding in my hand, if you're watching on CLTV, I don't know which camera's going to pick this up, but I'm holding in my hand the, the bobblehead. The bobblehead everybody dreams of, the bobblehead everybody wants, and it is the bobblehead of Troy Murray and John Weideman. And I'm holding it up just high enough now for it to be completely blocked.
It's very lifelike.
Which one? Right here? Yep, okay. All right, I'm switching this over now. So this is the bobblehead. Is this going to be given away tonight?
No, actually, they're not playing tonight, Steve.
Well, why would they give it away tonight then?
And when they're not.
Second time Dave has had to remind you that it's not tonight.
Well, Dave, I don't know why they give it away at a Bulls game. This is Troy and John.
It is Troy and John. Actually, you have another bobblehead there, do you not?
Don't I have enough near? Problems? You want me to switch it over?
I do, because tomorrow night, you know, they have a season.
Hold on, there's a game tomorrow night?
There is a game tomorrow night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Then there's a season-long celebration of the 2010 Stanley Cup champions, and they have several anniversary nights. And the first one will be tomorrow night, and they're going to give away the bobblehead that you are now opening.
By the way, this bobblehead comes without the plastic bag over Marian Hose's head, because you should never have a plastic bag over your head like this, Dave. It's dangerous.
Yes, it is. But so. The first 10,000 fans attending tomorrow night will get a 2010 anniversary series Marian Hossa bobblehead presented by
I'm looking at the picture on CLTV with Marian Hossa's head wrapped in plastic, but I believe we've secured it now, and it's Hossa dropping to his knees for his old goal celebration.
There you go.
He looks great.
He does. Yes, he does.
Now, here's the fun of this. If you have your own TV show, you can hold up Troy and John calling Marian Hossa dropping to his
Wouldn't
knees.
Wouldn't that be great?
Right? This is fantastic for everybody.
That's how I spend my afternoons.
So go ahead, play this out at home. There's Troy and John and Marian Hossa. You know, Dave, you can get these tomorrow night.
You can get the Marian Hossa bobblehead tomorrow night. You can get a Duncan Keith bobblehead December 15th.
But when can you get John and Troy?
I think you need to ask Troy that.
All right, let's go to the phone right now and find out. Troy, I'm hearing a rumor that it's Sunday when we get your bobblehead.
You guys are beauties.
This is like the worst promotion I have ever done for the Chicago Blackhawks.
And then Sunday, 6 o'clock start against the Washington Capitals. First 10,000 people at the United Center will be lucky enough to get a John Lydeman and Troy Murray bobblehead.
I got to say, you represent bald guys well in this, because the bald bobblehead is not easy to pull off.
It's just not easy to screw up either.
Well, there's that. You don't have to worry about a bad hair day.
Exactly.
So, Dave, let's review.
Great. John, I don't know. Not so much.
John's a little dicey. Dave, let's review then. Sunday is when you get this bobblehead.
John and
Dave,
Troy.
Write
Sunday.
These down so you don't screw these up again. Sunday is when you get Troy and John. And then Friday night, which
is tomorrow night,
Dave. Yes. That's tomorrow night, not tonight. Tomorrow night, you get the Marian Hossa bobblehead and the full drop to his knees and slide goal scoring celebration. All right?
That's the one.
I don't know how you screwed this up,
and
Dave.
Also,
it seems very clear to
also
me.
Tomorrow night, Dave Boland gets one more shift. Another member of the
I don't have a Dave Boland bobblehead. I'm not prepared.
Well, no, it's not Dave Boland bobblehead night. Is it, Troy?
It's Marian Hossa bobblehead night, Dave Boland one last shift night.
Okay.
Great to have Dave Boland back in town. He's always a fan favorite. He's a good guy. He's retired now. He's retired from hockey, 33 years of age, but he loves Chicago and he is excited to be back in town.
And he is going to be on with Ro Khan and Anna DeVontis this afternoon, so you can hear Boland on then. Yeah.
But just for 17 seconds.
Right. That's all he'll do. That's all he'll do. It's a good marketing thing. So the one last shift is tomorrow night, and then the Blackhawks have told me I get one last game after this weekend. I'm no longer allowed at the United Center. So
why is that?
Well, because I can't seem to promote the product here very well.
Are you sure that game's not tonight?
Don't be disappointed if you show up at the United Center tonight and there is no John Lydeman for
the All right, my friend. This team looks so much better. Last time out, it was, it was good for the soul. Do you agree?
Oh, yes. And I think for them, you're only, now four games into the season. But I think that was a huge game for everybody. And they played 60 minutes. That was kind of the issue that had been going on. They'd played some good first periods. They'd played well in spurts, but hadn't put a consistent 60 minutes together. And the hottest team in the NHL, the Edmonton Oilers, come in town, and they did a fantastic job for 60 minutes in quieting maybe the most dynamic offensive player in the game, and Connor McDavid.
And shutting down Connor McDavid's a big deal because he goes out, I think it was last night, and lit it up again.
Yeah, 5 points last night, goal and four assists. They defensively, Troy, they were terrific, and also a terrific game for Corey Crawford, which he needed too, right?
Yeah, I think it was important for Corey. Not that he played poorly, but I think that he was anxious to get back into the net. Robin Leonard played an excellent game against the Winnipeg Jets, and there was some speculation. And it's going to be tough. Everybody's going to be second-guessing Jeremy Colton all season long on which goaltender is going to start. You've basically got two number one goaltenders, and something that not a lot of teams are going to have to kind of work around. But you're going to see Robin Leonard a lot. You're going to see Corey Crawford a lot. And what you saw last game against the Oilers was vintage Corey Crawford. He was great.
So we know this talent exists on this team. By the way, Troy is reporting live from a runway at O'Hare.
I'm walking my dog.
We know that this team has talent. We know on paper this is a great team. Is it greedy for us to expect they're going to come together this fast, this early?
Well, I think you want to see a process of them getting better and better each game and taking what they did in that game against Edmonton and using that as a baseline moving forward. You're still not getting the production maybe that you would have expected early on from Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, and you know that that's going to come around. So as soon as that does, as soon as Alex DeBrincat starts scoring, if they can bring that all-around 60-minute effort, add the offensive player that we know that this team has, I think you're heading in the right direction.
Last word for you, Dave Ennett.
You mentioned...
Hold on, there's a plane coming in.
Apparently.
I got dogs, I got planes, I got...
let's look ahead a little bit to the weekend. Columbus is off to a good start. They won last night. They're a good young team. And Washington kind of a little bit up and down.
Troy was just eaten alive by a street sweeper.
I know. In the early going, okay. but
I'm off the main street now. Sorry, guys.
They've got 3 points so far on this homestand, and we've talked about this before. It was important for them to really take full advantage of it. If they can come up with some points against Columbus and against Washington before Vegas comes in Tuesday, I mean, it's a chance to have a nice homestand and a nice start to the season.
You can't fall too far behind, and yeah, it's only early in the season, but I think you look at the Edmonton Oilers, they've played 8 games. The Blackhawks have only played 4, and you've got 3 points, and the Oilers now what have 12 points, I think it is. You just look at it, and you're going like, wow, I mean, you don't want to fall too far behind the standings. And when you're looking up at the standings, it's not good, and it's not the formula for success. So playing 7 games in a row is something that I don't think you want to play 7 games in a row. It's too many at home in a row. But I think at the same time, they understand how important this home stretch is before they get on the road. And the games that are coming up are not easy. Columbus is a good hockey team. Washington, obviously. Vegas. Two of the more stronger teams in the NHL in games after Columbus. So you really want to focus on what you need to do here on home ice. And then I think that, as we said, the game against the Edmonton Oilers was a good stepping stone of heading in the right direction and playing 60 minutes. You got to play 60 minutes against these teams. And everybody in the NHL, there's too much parity. And if you're not prepared to play the right way for 60 minutes, you're going to lose games. And they have to have that mentality that whether it's Columbus, whether it's Washington, whether it's Vegas coming in, that they have the mentality that they're going to work hard for 60 minutes. And that, again, is just the baseline of what they need to do to be successful.
Last question. Is Hossa going to be there tomorrow night? Do we know?
That's a good question. I don't know if he is or not. We just saw him in Prague. So
yeah, he looked great, by the way. Looked like he could play for another 10 years.
Yeah, he's in great shape. He's a big guy, too. I mean, you don't realize how big Marian Hossa was. And when you saw him protect the puck and then you saw him, you know, after in his street clothes, I mean, he's a big man.
And a gentle hugger.
well, I'll take your word for that.
It's Troy Murray, a regular guest on the Steve Cochran Show, because he's our friend, sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. We'll hear your boys do the game tomorrow night. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I always appreciate it.
All right, stay out of traffic. Yep. We are going to take Mayor Lightfoot's press conference at the bottom of the hour as part of the news. So as long as that starts on time, it'll be at the bottom of the hour. If not, we'll roll with it and pick it up when we can. In the meantime, John, let's grab a minute here with our guest.
Oh, perfect. This is Michael Schindler from the Tivoli. Michael, our good friend.
Michael, nice to see you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
How are things at the Tivoli?
So far, so good.
It's a beautiful theater, a part of Classic Cinemas, and one of the great old theaters in Chicago, if not all the country.
Yeah, it's turned 90 years old this year, and it's been maintained as it was back in 1928.
So we're doing New Year's Eve with you guys again. When do we get tickets for this? Are they up now?
They're up now. If you go to classiccinemas.com/Steve, you can purchase them right there on our website, or you can also go to our box office during normal business hours and purchase them there.
How great is that? 7 o'clock New Year's Eve, we're planning on having John Weideman, Troy Murray, and Marian Hossa's bobbleheads all in attendance.
I knew you were going to say that.
I don't know what's going on. But we appreciate the partnership because we have nothing but fun with you guys.
Us too. It's one of the highlights of the year for us.
Who's going to be on the show, John?
Oh, it's going to be Tim Walco. Very funny musical act who's been doing comedy a long time. You did radio with him up in Minneapolis.
Actually, the truth is I replaced him.
You replaced him, yes.
He got fired and I took the show.
That's right.
But we like each other.
No, he's a great
show business.
Guy. And then Mike Toomey from WGN Morning TV will be on the show as well. Myself, Tim Banker. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I don't think there's room for me on that show.
No, you won't be there.
Yeah, I'm out.
You're doing the Hawks game. I'm giving away bobbleheads.
Bobbleheads, and I'll be parking cars live at the Tivoli that night.
But we switched it this year because we've been using Eventbrite the last 3 or 4 years. This is the first year where you can go directly to Classic Cinema's website and do this, classiccinema.com/Steve, to get tickets, or go to the box office. You can actually physically go to the box office and pick it up.
And is it .com?
ClassicCinemas.com/Steve.
ClassicCinemas.com/Steve. Get your tickets right there. So we made it a little bit easier, I think.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a rocking good time, 7 o'clock New Year's Eve. As always, Dave, it's New Year's Eve for people that can't stay awake until midnight.
Which is great.
And the deal is, if you come, you can leave by 9:30. It's a big movie night, too, by the way. We'll get into that later on. But it's an opportunity for you to come, go home, and tell people you were out all night. Because maybe in your case, you were. So it's going to be great.
That'll be good.
So stand by for that.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Musical director John DeCoste getting it done, doing his best Bill Withers.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I love Bill Withers. And I'm fond of John. We're standing by for Mayor Lori Lightfoot's press conference on the teacher strike. And while we wait for that, it gives us a couple more minutes with our friend Michael from the Tivoli. John, we have a New Year's Eve show, 7 o'clock at the Tivoli.
Right.
Back at the Tivoli for the, is this 3 or 4 years?
This will be our fourth year.
Fourth year this year.
Yeah.
And the way to get tickets is how?
Michael?
You can go to classiccinemas.com/Steve, or you can go to our box office whenever the theater is open.
Michael, there's a big movie that night.
There is. Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, will be playing starting December 20th. And
is this the original cast picking up where Luke was left on the cliffside?
I believe so. I believe this is the final chapter in the Skywalker saga.
The final chapter, much like Cher's last concert, was her final concert.
Do you think the Cochran Show has extended that series? Because it seems to be every year that we do New Year's Eve. Last year was the first.
There's a big Star Wars movie.
There's always a big Star Wars movie.
But this is the big one, right? This is the one that you'll sell out over and over again.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. This is the one that everyone's been waiting for.
How many times did you have a meeting once it was known that that movie would be out where you said, we got to cancel the Cochran Show. It's getting in the way of our movie.
I know.
We love you guys.
You know, we have fun.
Yeah.
Well, and that whole month of December, and I've said this before, my wife and I took our son to go see White Christmas at the Tivoli like five, 6 years ago or something like that. And now you're doing that again.
Yeah, we're doing our Christmas at the Tivoli series from December 13th. Through the 18th, where we're showing Christmas movies all week long, including It's a Wonderful Life and White Christmas, which we try to do every year.
Sure.
And, you know, we just put tickets on sale a couple days ago, and we've already sold over 800 tickets for It's a Wonderful Life.
Isn't that amazing?
Tremendous.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
it's tremendous.
I do recommend people getting their tickets in advance just to be safe. If you go to classiccinemas.com/holidays, you can find the tickets there.
And that would be the same for the Cochran New Year's Eve, because those tickets are this year they're going to go really fast.
Yeah. Well, we always have a big crowd.
Yeah, it's I love it there.
Yeah.
That's it. Just come out to see the theater, even if you don't like the show, it's okay. I'll give you a tour.
But I do tell people, because I run into people going, Steve, I get you for free. I don't need to pay to go see it. It's a completely different show.
Completely different show.
Yeah. So and we make it worth your while. I drive you home. If you've had too much to drink, I clean up your lawn. What? If you've not made it, this is a show you should come to.
Ah, okay.
She's right now.
G, just so you know, I know you don't have a vehicle, so that's okay. But the train takes you right downtown.
I thought you were going to send a car for me.
Downers Grove.
Why don't you guys pick her up?
Yeah, we'll send it to the train. We'll send it to the train.
Black car, one of those nice
sure,
yeah, whatever you need. Town cars.
You need? By the way, Mary Vanderbilt lives 4 minutes from the theater, and she's telling us how to get G there.
I know.
What time is this one again?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock this time.
Well, so the cool thing is you can go to this, and then you can go party afterwards.
Yep.
Too.
Yes. Yep. Or go home.
What happened to the 1 o'clock?
We got the 1 o'clock.
That's on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good for me.
Yeah. But we're talking about the
for
Tivoli.
People can't stay up till 3.
The Tivoli is our theater. We have become fine partners with them, and we love what you guys do. Now, Classic Cinemas is a great chain of great theaters all over the Chicago area. Notice how I refuse to say Chicagoland. And you have information on all the theaters on the website, right?
Yeah, if you go to classiccinemas.com, you can find information about all of our theaters. You can find showtimes, take virtual tours, all that good stuff. We've got 14 theaters all around the area.
You know, and I was telling Michael before, I had, if you live in Woodstock, I went out to see that theater.
It's fabulous.
Which was totally redone. It was absolutely gorgeous. And now, what, Freeport and Sandwich?
Oh, yeah, we have
how new are those?
There too. We've had those for a while.
Okay.
Sandwich is our newest theater. But yeah, we've got the Lake in Oak Park, the York in Elmhurst.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are great.
Great to see you, man.
You too. Thanks.
ClassicCinemas.com/Steve. Super Joe, what did you just tell me in my ears?
Lori Lightfoot is reading a children's book right now, so the press conference hasn't quite started, but...
Give me a tease. What are you going to do at the... Is there something spectacular that's going to happen?
It's a very funny and very entertaining night, but I'm more fascinated by Lori Lightfoot reading a children's book right now. All right, so tell me what you want to do, Joe. You want to take the break, or you want to go right to this?
Don, can you chip in? What's
our timing on this, Don, to get the mayor on?
I'm guessing it's still going to be another few minutes here. Right. She's in the middle of the book.
So let's take a break. We'll come back. We're not quite sure why Lori Lightfoot has started to read Captain. It's Captain Underpants.
Oh.
She's decided to read the entire Captain Underpants series just before a press conference. So first at 9:42, we'll do this and then come back on 7:20 WGN. Bill and Wendy coming up live from Tree Time after 10 o'clock. We are standing by Don Kleppen for the mayor, who you said is reading a children's book just for enjoyment, or is this for kids?
There are also kids present.
Okay, and is this near where the press conference is going to be held?
Yes, it is. It's the same area, but it looks like they've got a microphone kind of set up in a different spot for questions to be asked outside this classroom she's in now.
All right, and as far as we know, she's still reading?
Yeah, she's still reading.
So the complete collected works of Hans Christian Andersen, is that what we're going through right now?
It does seem like a lengthy kid's book.
Okay, all right. In the meantime, while we stand by, Don, and let us know when you're ready, or when she's ready, I should say.
Will do.
Texters from this morning, every teacher knows exactly what the contract terms are. If you don't like the pay or the class size, find another job. Unions are strong-arm tactics, and I come from the knowledge of being a former teacher. Okay, it's easier to say than done, but if you're truly unhappy, yes, you could find another job, but it's a big deal to go find another job. So, a lot of people called this morning and said, hey, the city seems to find money for World Series parades and Stanley Cup parades. Texter says, I thought the teams reimbursed the city for those parades. And I think they do reimburse the city for costs. I don't know that all the costs are passed on to the teams. Because, frankly, it's good PR for the city when those things happen.
Yep.
Another texter, my wife's a CPS teacher. She had to buy materials in order to teach certain subjects, since she does not have a textbook for them, or not enough of textbooks for other subjects as well. Yeah, teachers spend out-of-pocket money all the time. My daughter's a teacher. Always is having to buy things here and there. Another texter says $100,000 for 9 months is ridiculous. Again, there's a messaging issue here. $100,000 would be the, as I understand it, would be the average salary 5 years from now. As this 3 to 3.5% cost of living raise kicks in over the next 5 years, and that's the average salary. Doesn't mean it's the starting salary or the salary on the higher end. And, you know, obviously, if you're bothered by that, you can choose to be. The ultimate truth here is the teachers aren't completely right. Or I should say the union for the teachers is not completely right. But the city has not handled this previously as well as they could either. That's how we get into this mess. And what aggravates me is it always comes down to the 11th hour and the 59th minute. And then sometimes you have things like this, which is a strike. And who's penalized the most? The 300,000 kids and the families of those kids who now have to juggle. So, and you well know if it's not your kid, it's another kid who can't afford to miss a day of school, let alone some untold amount of time. So, 708, I'm a teacher, and if you were a teacher, you would know it's not a 9-month job or a 7-hour day. True story. Yeah. And let's see, one more. If they work 52 weeks a year, then there'd be no problem at all with all the holidays they get. It's a lot of anger about teachers out there. Okay. One more break, you said? All right, we'll take one more break here. We're juggling because we want to make sure we get on with the mayor. Mayor Lightfoot should be next on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand standing by in the newsroom. Steve, the texters this morning, I'm surprised at the cops taking shots at teachers, the nurses taking shots at teachers, the nurses and the teachers defending themselves. I mean, you know, I don't know the upside between all these fine folks providing these essential services to us pounding on each other.
It's an unusual strike in that they're not striking for salary or for benefits or things like that. They're striking for things that I think are, you know, a little harder for people to understand. Social justice. They're talking about social justice and things like that. You know, that's not what you typically see a union go out and strike for.
Yeah, it's true. It is harder to wrap your head around it. And when the union throws in affordable housing, which is an absolutely important argument, into this, it makes it even more confusing.
Right. Everyone's for more affordable housing, but I'm not sure they agree that you should close down the schools for it.
Yeah, it doesn't fit right now. All right. How far away are we from Lori Lightfoot?
Well, she was reading a book to children, and there's another room set up for her to come and make some comments. So I would say, I don't know, Steve, 5 or 10 minutes.
There's a couple of texters you can help me address here. Am I correct that teachers lose no wages during a strike? They get a strike pay, which is pretty minimal, right?
Well, and they often will make up the lost days, so they'll get paid that way. So it's likely that they will. I shouldn't say that. It's possible that they will be reimbursed.
So they could be whole out of this, but we don't know because it obviously depends on how long the strike is.
The mayor has said that they would not make up the school days, but the city school system loses money if they don't make up those days as well. So there's incentive for them to do that.
Teachers can, this is another texter, teachers can retire at 55 and get nearly full salary. Unrealistic cost of living wage is double our salary in 20 years. Who gets that? Those are all need to be fact-checked phrases.
Yeah, there's a lot that needs to be fact-checked through this. But we're getting an indication that the mayor might be getting pretty close, so maybe within a couple of minutes.
All right, so we'll stand by, and you'll tell me when to take it over. Steve will take us to the mayor from the newsroom. And again, we'll take this as long as the questions are relevant. If it just gets into a redundant sort of thing, Steve will pitch it back. Bill and Wendy are coming up at 10 o'clock from tree time as well. In the meantime, John DeCoste, thank you for appearing on the program today. I know how busy you are.
Fact or fiction?
We ran out of time for fact or fiction. I'm going to go with fact. All right, Steve, all yours.
All right, Mayor Lightfoot now is moving toward a podium where we expect her to answer some questions about the teacher strike. She's in the North Lawndale neighborhood after visiting some kids at a center where they're spending their day as we wait. And Steve, any minute now, we expect Mayor Lightfoot to come to the podium, answer some questions. The union, Jesse Sharkey, has been out throughout the morning as well, saying that they are not going to go for a fast deal. They're going to go for a fair deal. So it's not clear just how long this strike might go on. The negotiations were set to start again, to be renewed about 35 minutes ago. That's at Malcolm X College.
So they are actually talking this morning.
Yeah, they're back together, or they were supposed to be. That's what the schedule said, around 9:30.
Right, and some glad-handing and handshaking and smiling going on.
The mayor is moving toward the podium now, so we expect to hear from her in just a moment. Here we go.
So, questions?
What do you say to the parents who are so inconvenienced right now?
Well, that's why we went out ahead yesterday and let parents know that this strike was happening. We got notification the night before, and we wanted to make sure that we gave parents enough of a heads up so that they could start making plans. And the one thing that I want to emphasize is Dr. Jackson has said repeatedly, all CPS schools are going to be open. Those are going to be staffed by the building principal, the assistant principal, and other staff, non-union staff at the school. So when parents bring their kids there, they're going to still see a familiar, friendly face, so their kids will be safe. We've gone to other facilities today, and I think I appreciate the way that members of the community are really stepping up to open up their doors, to provide a safe place for our kids to be, to give them food and shelter and entertainment over the course of the day. I'm, of course, grateful that our parks are open. All of our field houses are up and operational. So far, so good. We're checking in on a regular basis citywide to make sure that everything is working flawlessly.
The newspaper editorials have both said stand strong, hang tough, easy for them to say, of course. But do you think they've also suggested, at least our paper has, that you might have made a mistake in promising the raise and raising the raise so early on? Where do you go from here without really bankrupting the store?
Well, we're not moving any further on money because we can't. I thought it was important for us, after we went through the fact-finding process, to advance a very fair and generous compensation package for our teachers, and we believe that we've done that. So I'm hopeful that we'll continue discussions and that this strike will be limited in duration. But from a financial standpoint, we always have to keep in mind the taxpayers. CPS is just on the other side of a pretty significant crisis, and we don't have unlimited resources. But having said that, we put very generous offers on the table, both for teachers and support personnel, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to bring them back to the table and resolve all the other open issues. Truthfully, over the last couple of weeks, we really haven't been talking about compensation at all. What we've been talking about is a series of other ancillary issues.
more recently, the two issues that they ask us to focus on, class sizes and staffing, I thought we made actually significant progress on in responding back and forth to their expressed desires around those two issues. So really the focal point has been non-compensation issues. So I feel good about that, but we need to get back to the table and get a deal done. Yes, right here.
And there are teachers and support staff today saying, you know, these are the things that the mayor campaigned on, putting a nurse in every school, a librarian in every school. Mm-hmm. What do you say to those folks who think that you've maybe made down promises or you're not following through on these campaigns?
Well, I think what they need to do is go to our offer, cps.edu/our offer, because what you'll see there is that we've made good on the things that I said during the campaign. Back at the end of August, the Chicago Public Schools Board voted on a budget that allocated substantially more nurses, counselors, case management. That more recently, we told the union, and maybe they haven't fully communicated that to their membership, that not only that, we hadn't stopped, we were continue hiring. The numbers of personnel that are in our schools, the year-over-year increase is substantial. Plus, we added another $400,000 every year to create the pipeline to be able to actually fill those positions. So we've made good on what we've said. We're going to continue to press forward. We know that these additional resources are important. What I've asked repeatedly is for Jesse Sharkey and the CTU to join us in helping fulfill the pipeline, to go to college campuses, to do the recruiting. They haven't taken us up on that, but we're not going to wait. We're going to continue doing what we said. Go ahead, Bill.
What does the end game look like to you to make a deal?
Well, I think we have put on the table, excuse me, a structure, both on compensation, around class sizes, around staffing, and a number of other supports that have the outlines and the framework for a deal, but we can't bargain in by ourselves. So what we need is for the union to come back to the table, to bargain in good faith, and spend the time actually getting a deal done face-to-face with us, and not off to the side in a caucus. We need them to focus in the bargaining sessions on actually hammering out a deal and getting it done.
If we do that, the strike goes, Mayor, doesn't it hurt you too?
No,
because the pressure comes from the parents and they're going to blame everybody, right?
No, I don't see it that way, and I don't look at it that way. This isn't about politics for me. This is about making sure that we are protecting our children, that we're providing a safe and nurturing environment for them, and that we get a deal done that both respects the teachers and the support staff, honors our fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers, and then puts in place a good, solid foundation for our children on which to continue to grow and thrive. The politics doesn't matter to me.
With the mayor?
I can't speculate about that.
Mayor,
yes, Becky.
Is school off tomorrow, or not when will you announce?
Yeah, we until we get notification from the CTU that they're intending to come back to the classroom, school is canceled for the duration.
Mary,
yes, go back here. Let me go back. Let me go back here.
Mary, yeah. You said yesterday you thought that this strike had been in the works for a while. Short of giving them everything they wanted on the first offer, was this strike inevitable in your mind?
Well, I don't want to speculate about what was the intention of the CTU. But there's a deal that could have been had. We could have had this deal at the end of August. We could have had it in September. We could have had it any time in October. If you really want to avoid a strike, you actually ramp up the bargaining days. You stay at it night and day. You talk about the main issues. You actually give counter proposals and not just reject what's on the table. There's a real back and forth and dialogue. We saw a little bit of that in the waning days before the strike started, but it certainly wasn't there early on. That's the seriousness of purpose that we have to need, a sense of urgency to get this deal done. And I hope that when we return to the bargaining table, that sense of urgency will be there, because there's a sense of urgency certainly on our part.
When do you return to the bargaining table?
What is, you know, obviously you put forth all these things to the CTU.
You're listening to live coverage of Mayor Lightfoot as she talks about day one of the Chicago Teachers Union strike on WGN Chicago.
Is there more give on your part? What's the directive?
Well, I'm not going to reveal our bargaining strategy here in the media. I think we put a very good deal on the table. I think we have a framework in place to get a deal done. But, you know, as the saying goes, it takes two to tangle. And we need to make sure that we have CTU at the table night and day in good faith to close the gap and get a deal done. We can't bargain by ourselves.
You could yank the deal that you have. You could do that. Now that they're on strike, you could say, all bets are off now. Will you do that?
What I want to do is make sure that we continue to have productive discussions with the union so that we can get a deal done. That's what I want to do. Say it again.
They're at the table this morning before ahead of the round.
Mayor, how do you feel? You're heading into the budget next week. You're in a very difficult period of your administration now. I mean, the honeymoon is really over now in terms of the strike, the
so
budget,
you, so you
taxes.
Say.
No, but
so you say.
Well, how do you
look,
feel about
I think
governor and
here's what I think. I have personally gotten a lot of support from random people that I don't know via email. Somehow somebody's sending out my cell phone number and I'm getting text messages. But the truth is, I'm hearing a lot from CPS parents. I'm hearing a lot from teachers and support staff that they understand that we respect them, that we put a good deal on the table, that we respect teachers, and that we should get a deal done. So I feel very good about where we are. Of course, no one wants to strike. And it'd be foolish to say it's fine. We need to get this deal done. We need to get back to business as usual because we need to get our kids back in school. Every day we're out, that hurts our children. That hurts our children. So we need to make sure that we do everything possible to create an environment where we can get back to the table, where we can get a deal done so that our kids can be back in their normal rhythm and cadence. It's October. We're in school for little over a month and a half, and as Dr. Jackson can certainly attest, this is the time where teachers and students are starting to gel. Mm-hmm. There is a rhythm that has started in the classroom. We don't need to disrupt that with a lengthy strike.
Are you going to put any budget money toward anything at the schools, any of the supports?
We don't need to do that. We don't need to do that.
Knowing what you know about the bargaining, what's happening at the bargaining table, how long could this last?
Look, I don't want to speculate about length, but we certainly believe that we can get a deal done. We could get a deal done today. If there is a seriousness of purpose and a willingness on the other side, we can get a deal done today.
Mayor, today. You continue to say that this could be resolved today soon, but they continue to say we are nowhere close.
Well, we obviously have differences of opinions, which is why there's a strike. That's my hope is that they will come back to the table. We have a sense of urgency. We will get a deal done and return our children to the classes and the schools where they can learn and flourish.
Will the deal get any better? Will the deal get any better in any way?
The last question here.
Your message to parents. I know you're a parent. Are you concerned about what will happen with the kids being out of school? What are you telling parents and kids?
Of course I am, which is why we started putting together contingency plans some time ago. But we have a very good plan in place. We're doing real-time monitoring. You know, I'm here at this site. I was at a site earlier this morning. The kids are happy. They're well protected. They're walking into places that they're familiar with. They're seeing familiar faces. So I would say to parents, yes, this is an inconvenience. There's no question about it. But we have a network of supports that are there at the neighborhood level. We encourage people to go to their schools. If that's not convenient, go to a school that's age-appropriate, or go to a number of our different community partners. All of that information and a map showing the various sites are up on cps.edu/contingency plans. But we'll keep messaging that out so our parents know that we're there for them, our students know that we're there for them, and that we support them.
Are you worried about a school system hemorrhaging students, hemorrhaging more?
Mayor Lightfoot speaking there after helping with reading a book to children as they are not in school but instead are at different care centers or school buildings around the city. That is her view of the strike. Of course, there is another one as well. WGN's Ryan Burrow spent the morning with CTU President Jesse Sharkey.
What do we want?
Fair contracts!
When do we want it?
Now!
Here at Pierce Elementary School, dozens of teachers wearing red and holding signs march around the front of the school. The mayor says these teachers are demanding $2.5 billion in additional costs in a new contract. Teachers Union President Jesse Sharkey does not dispute that.
Our demands are significant. We have real demands. It's because the needs are significant.
Their demands include smaller class sizes, more support staff, and additional prep time. On the north side, Ryan Burrow, WGN News.
We'll check your money, sports, traffic, and weather all next on WGN.